5-9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. A ship has arrived in Cyprus carrying 1,000 Americans evacuated from Lebanon. Reporter Amy Gutman is there.
The Orient Queen has just pulled up and just docked here in Larnaca, you know, dropping more anchors and tying ropes around the port. Lots of people are starting to come out on deck now. I'm guessing a lot of people have fallen asleep. It's over a nine-hour journey. That's when it's taken. A very tiring journey. Over 1,000 people on this boat. The boat is massive.
More evacuations are planned over the coming days by sea and by air. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv is in Tel Aviv with the latest on the Israeli military going after a top Hezbollah leader. Dan, what do we know at this point?
It's unusual for the Israeli military to provide so many details about a mission whose results aren't known. But for some reason, an officer here is confirming that waves of Israeli warplanes have dropped 23 tons of explosives on a bunker in southern Beirut, where leaders of Hezbollah are believed to be hiding, reportedly about 100 feet underground. The Israelis say the number one leader of that Shiite Muslim group, Sheikh Nasrallah, may be in the bunker. They describe him as a local version of Osama bin Laden. Cammy?
The debate in the House continues over expanding federal funding for embryonic stem cell research.
In vetoing this bill, the president's gone against more than 70% of Americans who support stem cell research using embryos.
There is no justification for the destruction of innocent life for the sake of another.
Supporters don't have enough votes to override the president's veto today. Correspondent Peter Mayer is at the White House.
President Bush warns the measure he vetoed crossed a moral boundary.
This bill would support the taking of innocent human life in the hope of finding medical benefits for others.
The president killed the measure very soon after it reached his desk. The action is politically popular with many conservatives, although it put him at odds with Nancy Reagan and Senators Bill Frist and Orrin Hatch, who all support the research. Democrats plan to use the veto as a fall campaign issue. Peter Mayer, CBS News, the White House.
The House has just approved a bill to protect the Pledge of Allegiance. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss is on Capitol Hill.
Upset that a federal court in California ruled school children shouldn't recite the phrase "under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance, House Republicans passed a bill stripping federal courts of all jurisdiction over any cases involving the pledge. State courts could still hear them, but under this bill, their decisions could never be appealed to the Supreme Court. It's not likely the Senate will even take this bill up before the Congress adjourns.
Two men in the Atlanta area have been indicted for participating in paramilitary training in North Georgia. The indictment says they plotted attacks on civilian and government targets. The two had previously been accused of traveling to Canada to meet with Islamic extremists. Now they're also charged with traveling to Washington to film possible targets. On Wall Street today, the Dow finished up 212 points. This is CBS News.
Somewhere between what a person is saying and what they're not saying, between what a person wants and what they need, lies understanding. For every client, everywhere, UBS has the distinct ability to listen. But more importantly, the commitment to understand. UBS, leader in wealth management, global asset management, and investment banking, and committed to a relationship we call you and us. Member SIPC.
Wake up! It's time for the semi-annual jewelry and watch sale at Overstock.com. If you're looking for a fun fashion statement with some bling or exquisite jewelry by some of the hottest designers, like John Atencio and Damiani, Overstock.com has reduced prices at an additional 15%. Stunning watches by Invicta, Movado, Tag Heuer, and more. Name brands up to 70% off. Don't wait. The sale ends midnight, July 24th. Shop Overstock.com.
A shiny symbol of New Orleans, destroyed by Hurricane Katrina, once again covers the city's Superdome, as Chris Miller of WWL reports.
It's the signature piece of the New Orleans skyline, and it's back.
Your roof is white again, and we are one happy crew.
Tom Keller of Brazos Urethane is the project manager here at the Superdome for the roof replacement. After 4.5 months and 500,000 square feet of galvanized metal, the job is done almost 2 months ahead of schedule. Keller said it was a once-in-a-lifetime time experience.
We love this job. I've been driving by this roof since I was 18 years old thinking, someday I'm going to play up there.
Chris Miller for CBS News, the Louisiana Superdome.
An attorney for a New Orleans doctor and two nurses accused of killing hospital patients after Hurricane Katrina says they did nothing wrong, and one lawyer calls a nurse heroic. The three are accused of delivering a deadly dose of morphine and sedatives to four patients trapped in a hospital. I'm Cammy McCormick, CBS News.
This is Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. Give someone special to you the gift that will be remembered for years to come. Name a star after them. The Star Registry will name a star after anyone on your gift list for $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com. It's the perfect gift for birthdays, weddings, and just about any occasion. Give the ultimate gift. Call the Star Registry at 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com. We proudly support the Starlight Starbright Children's Foundation.
I found a great summer hotel deal.
Let me guess, your parents' house?
No, Priceline has the top 50 vacation spots, up to 50% off.
Places we actually want to go?
Soho, New York.
Yeah.
The Strip in Vegas.
Ooh.
Waikiki, Hawaii.
Up to 50% off?
When you name your own price. Check out all 50 spots on Priceline.
Oh, I'm guessing your parents' house didn't make the list.
The 50-50 hotel savings event, only on Priceline. More ways to save. Exact hotel shown only after purchase.
It is 6 minutes after the hour. Time to launch another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. We got 3 hours, but there's not enough time to talk about everything that's in the news. We'll do our best, though. Coming up first, we'll get reaction to the president's misguided veto of the stem cell legislation that came out of the Senate yesterday. We'll get coverage of the situation that continues in the Middle East. Professor Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco will join us in about a half an hour. We'll get our news update on developments in the last 24 hours between Israel and its two fronts. That's Lebanon and the Palestinian occupied territories. Chris Tonsing from the Middle East Report will be joining us at the top of next hour. We're also going to get a report from Mark Crispin Miller, who is a powerful advocate for free and fair elections in these United States. We're going to talk about Cynthia McKinney, the congresswoman from Georgia, a primary that it got debolded yesterday. Voters reported when they attempted to vote for Ms. McKinney, the debold electronic voting machine, the DRE, instead cast a vote for her opponent. We'll also talk about his new article, Mark Crispin Miller's, How to Preempt the November Surprise. Our weekly debriefing from Larissa Alexandrovna from RawStory.com covers American torture in the United States on American citizens. That's from a UN report that is in process right now. And in our free speech zone, we're going to pause for commentary from our House counsel, Marjorie Cohn. She'll join us to talk about the Arms Export Act and why Israel should be only able to use American-supplied weapons in a defensive manner. And there are other issues we'll talk with Marjorie about if time permits. That's all ahead, plus your phone calls. You can join the conversation whenever the urge strikes you. Call us on the Central Coast, 831-899-5792, or toll-free from anywhere in the continental U.S. at 888-579-2540. Well, the Senate showed some courage and independence from the White House yesterday. 64 votes in favor of stem cell legislation. And the president made good on his threat, and he vetoed it earlier today. We get reaction from Dr. Jonathan Moreno. He is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, and he's also a professor of biomedical ethics and director of the Center for Biomedical Ethics at the University of Virginia. In addition, he is the author of a new book called Is There an Ethicist in the House? And that's Thomas Dolby there. She blinded me with science. And is the president blinded by science? Is he fuzzy on the science of embryonic stem cell research? Or is it a craven political pandering to the religious right? Dr. Jonathan Moreno, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Peter. Thank you.
Why did the president do this?
Well, he says he did it because he didn't want to validate the destruction of human embryos, even for good purpose. But he's already done that when he, in his 2001 speech, said that he would endorse federal funding on research for the existing embryonic stem cell lines.
Right.
So I don't really understand how one could say this is a moral position that's consistent. You know, I'm not the political expert, but it kind of begins to look that way.
Mm-hmm.
He was at his, I mean, he literally did everything, including kiss babies, at the announcement today of the veto. It was amazing.
Well, not to correct you, but there was an interesting maneuver by the White House, and Tony mm-hmm. Snow advised the press room that the president privately signed the veto letter or document
mm-hmm.
And refused to have reporters or photographers witness that. And then he went for the positive spin photo op
right.
with the snowflake babies. Describe what they are.
Well, these are babies that have been adopted. They were frozen embryos in fertility clinics, or at least they were in fertility clinics as embryos. They were adopted by couples. There are 400,000, it's estimated, embryos in fertility clinics in the U.S. alone. They've managed to get about 127, 128 babies this way. It's amazing to me that there are 500,000 born children who are orphans. Nearly all of them are in poverty, and we can't get the president to have a press conference about them.
Yeah. So it speaks to the skewed motivation of the people who respond to his religious-themed objections to embryonic stem cell research. They equate it with the right to life movement. They invoke the culture of life that is the code word for anti-abortion activists, and they conflate. An embryo with, I mean, I heard Sam Brownback, the senator from Kansas, in his debate in the Senate the other day.
Yeah.
He referred to embryos as young lives.
Well, it's even worse. I mean, in well-informed political commentators like George Will, who, by the way, favors embryonic stem cell research, called them fetuses last weekend on one of the talk shows.
Really?
Yeah. So what I guess, you know, the academic world, the scientists have failed to get across what we're talking about. And what we're talking about is a six-day-old embryo. It's a ball of a few dozen cells. It bears no resemblance to anything except a ball, a bunch of little cells. It is not a fetus. It has no structure to it. If it's in a woman's body, it would not have implanted yet in the uterus, so it would not create a pregnancy.
Doctor, the simple argument that I use with people who invoke these second-hand rationales to oppose embryonic stem cell research, I say, when was the last time one of your devout religious friends had a religious service, a burial, a blessing, or some other kind of funeral service for an embryo? It's never happened.
That's right.
But they try to sanctify. They try to sanctify this life in the political debate when it is not sanctified in any practical manner whatsoever.
Well, that's right. I mean, a lot of the argument is an argument from potentiality, that under the right conditions, and that's an important phrase, under the right conditions, I'll come back to that, an embryo can become a baby. Well, under the right conditions, an acorn can become an oak tree, but an acorn is not an oak tree.
Right.
It's a fallacy. Now, I want to say under the right conditions, Peter, because there are some scientists now who believe that we can actually get a human egg to start behaving like an embryo. It's called parthenogenesis. It happens with some animals in nature. So you could actually, under the right conditions, coax an egg without a sperm to make an embryo and to make a baby. And there are some people who think that spermatogenesis is going to be possible someday. So you won't need an egg. You'll just need a sperm to make a baby.
And Dr. Marino, would you concede that we do need to wrestle with ethical issues
absolutely.
Related to biological and bioengineering developments, but this is not the critical case?
Absolutely. We absolutely have to. And if I didn't think so, I'd be out of business, because that's what I do. And we have to worry that science does not always go down the right road. But people are reading the wrong signals on this. The minority of Americans who don't get this, I think, are reading the wrong signals. Some of them do get it and simply have their religious view, which is fine. They're entitled to. It's a free country. But people do have moral differences in the society, and somehow we find ways to move ahead. And there are ways, I think, to respect the views of individuals who don't think that this is right. Those people, for example, do not need to donate their embryos for research. They don't need, if it comes to a time of cures, they don't need to enjoy the cures that come from that research. That's sort of a mean way to look at it. But, you know, how much do you really believe in your position? If you really mm-hmm. believe in it, then when those first treatments do become available, and I think it's going to be a while, I have to say, it's going to be 10 years or so, then would you say to your loved ones, you know, I don't like the way they did this. I don't think you should do it. I think we are going to see the first human experiments with embryonic stem cell research within the next couple of years, and I think it's probably going to be spinal cord injury, which is going to make everybody think about Chris Reeve again, and, you know.
Well, and I've seen the rat from Irvine, and I'll explain that. There is a laboratory at UC Irvine where they successfully used stem cells to fuse the spine of a rat whose spine had been seriously fractured.
Yep.
And I've seen the time-lapse video of it, and it's quite impressive. And it gives incredible hope to a wide range of people who may not feel that their spine can be repaired, may not feel that their Parkinson's can be ameliorated or somehow abated, but who believe that through this process we're going to get a greater understanding of what causes these chronic conditions or, you know, what could reverse the damage from a Christopher Reeve accident, for example. And I also believe that we're going to be able to develop new medications and other treatment modes for diseases that currently don't offer much.
What you said is really important. What most of us think about when we think about embryonic stem cell research is repairing tissues that are failed for one reason or another. But the drug development aspect is very important. Being able to use these cells and expose them with their different combinations of genes to different drugs in a petri dish instead of in a person. That is really important. And the other thing that you said, which is very important, is that there are some diseases that we're kind of up against a hard place on. Alzheimer's is one of them. There are no good new theories about Alzheimer's disease. So if we could actually look at cells that have a particular array of genes that will finally lead to Alzheimer's disease, and see how those genes start to express themselves from the very beginning in the development of an embryo, then we will actually be able to generate new ideas for treatment. But so there are these possibilities with embryonic stem cell research could happen within the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
But as Orrin Hatch said, you know, we've been set back a year. That's a shame. In California, you know, you're trying to move ahead. I think probably that eventually that institute will get up and running.
Yeah.
There are now about four or five other states that have also committed money. New York State, I believe, is going to commit $1 billion if Spitzer becomes governor. I think there is some hope in for private research in places like Missouri and Texas and maybe Florida. So,
and in England, too. There's quite a bit
going on. The British and the Canadians, the British are particularly ahead of us, and the Pacific Rim. I'm going to China next week to observe work that's going to be started.
And despite the setbacks in South Korea, there is an active research program going on there, too. Doctor, we've got to take a quick break. We'll return in just a moment. Dr. Jonathan Moreno is our guest. He is a professor of biomedical ethics and director of the Center for Biomedical Ethics at the University of Virginia. If you have a question or comment, this is the time. 831-899-5792 or toll free, 888-579-2540. As we continue, I want to ask him about the right-wing spin on adult stem cells and what potential that area of research offers. We'll continue in just a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary or 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth.
Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, meet Louis Basil of Jamestown Real Estate. And joining Louis will be Ronnie Bramer of New Horizon Real Estate Group of St. Petersburg, Florida. Ronnie and Louis will be sharing some great hot spots to invest in Florida and Louisville, Kentucky. That's this week on Rock Roller Real Estate. Heard every Sunday morning at 10. Listen online at rockrollerrealestate.com. For more information on this show and to be a guest, call 408-892-3376. 408-892-3376.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, where it's 22 minutes past the hour. My guest is Dr. Jonathan Moreno, and he's a professor of biomedical ethics at the University of Virginia, author of a new book called Is There an Ethicist in the House? And Dr. Moreno, just respond to this. The president's soundbite today is that he vetoed this bill because he doesn't believe that it's right to take a life to save a life. And at some peril, I was listening to a right-wing talk show the other day, Laura Ingraham, and she had Senator Brown back on. And they were putting out this positive spin about the great developments from adult stem cells and also from cord blood. And while these areas do offer some prospect and should not be left behind or ignored, compare the prospects of those two areas with embryonic stem cell research.
Well, I'm glad Ms. Ingraham and Senator Brownback think that there's as much promise in those areas as there is in embryonic stem cell research. Unfortunately, the scientific community doesn't think so. They think we need to press ahead with all three areas. The difference is that adults, they're called adult stem cells, which you and I have in our bodies, hiding deep in our tissues, but not very many of them. The problem is that they do not have the potential to become different kinds of tissues the way that embryonic stem cells do.
Right.
They also don't replicate in the laboratory the way that embryonic stem cells can. So they just don't do the job. The best example of adult stem cells is bone marrow transplantation. It's been going on for 30 or 40 years. But those are very limited. They can become blood cells, and that's about it. So until we can figure out how to get those so-called adult stem cells to what the scientists say de-differentiate, which means be returned to more like the earlier state, which we have no idea how to do, not even close to figuring that out, they will simply not be as useful. There's no reputable scientist or scientific organization in the world that has said that adult stem cells will do the job.
Yeah. Let's go to the calls. We've got Dave from Eureka. Hello, Dave. You're on the air on the Peter B. Collins Show with Dr. Moreno.
Peter and Dr. Moreno, the most critical thing in my thinking of this is that excess stem cells get thrown in the hazardous waste trash or burned or down the garbage disposal or whatever. To use them for scientific research would be a morally objectionable thing. I think there's a total consistency about this White House. They have gone the way most destructive to the people on every turn.
Well, I agree that it seems very strange to say that it's all right to dispose of an embryo, but not to give that couple, if they want to, the opportunity to donate it for research. And by the way, I co-chaired a National Academy of Sciences committee last year that set out rules for this, and we said that the couple had to give full consent. They had to know that these embryos were going to be used for research, that no money could change hands, they couldn't be paid for them, and that they couldn't even be asked about donating to research until after they'd completed their reproductive plans. So I think there are ethical ways to separate this completely from reproduction, and I agree that this is a precious resource, and we're just not using it well.
And if you go back to August of 2001, the famous five-week vacation prior to 9/11, the president, had a televised speech, this Solomonic moment that they tried to portray it as, and he tried to split the baby and said, well, you know, anything that's been developed up to this point is okay, and anything from this point forward arbitrarily is not, and will not receive federal support or, approval from the administration. And it's just irrational to consider that some sort of a moral judgment.
Yeah, and what he could have said, Peter, if he'd been willing to today, is, time has passed. There are dozens of new lines available. They're much more potent and useful, scientists tell us, than the 21 lines we've got now, which are getting old and developing mutations in the laboratory. So, and federal money hasn't been used to derive or destroy any embryos to get these stem cells. So let's now invest in research involving these new lines. He could have taken the same position. He could have said, we're going to move the cut forward now to today. And he would have been completely consistent.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid that this president is going to go down history as the most and maybe the first really anti-science president in the history of the United States.
Sure, climate change, this kind of research, there are a lot of different areas.
I've been saying all day, about a year ago I was at a meeting in Washington with a senior scientist said, the problem in Washington today is not partisanship, that's not new. The problem is that people don't look at the evidence.
Yeah.
And it's not only this area, as you have just said, but it's a number of areas.
Joe in Pacific Grove, thanks for your call. You're on the air with Dr. Moreno.
Yeah, hi. I'm glad you get these guests that are actually experts on some. Could I ask two questions? I'll take my answer off the air.
Go ahead.
Since you're with University of Virginia.
Yep.
Since you're so close to Washington, is there any way you could invite yourself or have them invite you in for when Condoleezza's reading Bush's breakfast over his Cheerios? Maybe explain to him that an embryo.
All right, what's your second question? Don't have much time, Joe.
The question is, one of them's dumb, and I don't know if I can say sperm on the air. But
yeah, it's okay.
Anyway, nobody's saying right to life on that. But did either of you see the?
Go ahead, Joe. We just have a limited time.
Just before the election, I saw Bush and his wife. With Schwarzenegger in near a university that was doing stem cell research. Mm-hmm. It was right after Christopher Reeves died, and they said that I don't know if either of you can get that sound bite. I was shocked. Bush's wife was saying that he's the best friend of stem cell research. Did either of you catch that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the reason that she has said that, and it's very misleading, is that he has said that these 21 lines back in August 2001 were eligible for funding.
Yeah,
and she said, "Well, President Clinton didn't fund this." Well, President Clinton wanted to. They ran out of time.
Dr. Moreno, we're out of time, and thank you very much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Appreciate it. Take care.
And thank you, Joe, for the call. This is Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyet, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Hello, this is Al Moore with More Imported Cars in Monterey, where we feature quality pre-owned motor cars. It has been said that the world's best automobiles are manufactured within sight of the Alps. They include Mercedes-Benz, BMWs, and Porsches. These are the marks of dreams, and they're the manufacturers we specialize in. Some of our European autos start as low as $21,000 and experience very little depreciation. In fact, many of our Porsches actually increase in value, and our Porsches and other German autos have surprisingly good gas mileage too. Many of our autos are covered under manufacturer's warranty or are available with short or long-term service agreements. We also can arrange financing, and we do accept trades.
Drop by More Imported Cars, 999 Del Monte Avenue in Monterey, or browse to moreimports.com. That's M-O-H-R imports.com. Call Al Moore at 831-373-3131.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty news shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm glad about that. 33 minutes past the hour. Coming up next hour, Mark Crispin Miller, who wrote the book called How the Right Stole the 2004 Election, and, well, it goes on and on. He'll be joining us to talk about the primary in Georgia yesterday, where it appears that Cynthia McKinney got debolded. Yeah, that's a verb now, officially. And before that, Chris Tonsing will join us with our daily update on the military events in the Middle East. He's from the Middle East Report. And in just a moment, Dr. Stephen Zunis, a professor at the University of San Francisco, will join us to give us his views on that ongoing conflict in the Middle East. But I wanted to pause for a moment to acknowledge that this week marks the first anniversary of the Peter B. Collins Show. We launched it last year this week on KRXA 540 in Monterey. And I'm delighted to
have made all kinds of new friends in Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz, in Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County, in Phoenix and Sacramento area. And to celebrate our first anniversary, we're giving away a case of fine Central Coast wine, and none of it comes in a box, so Stephanie Miller won't be interested. It's from select vintners in Monterey County in the Santa Cruz Mountains, courtesy of our friends at Monterey Bay Wine Company. If you'd like to enter, just drop me an email. Send it to Peter at peterbcollins.com. Include your name, address, a daytime phone, and tell me that you're at least 21 years of age. And tell me your most memorable moment on the Peter B. Collins Show over the past year. One entry per person, please. And if you don't have email, you can mail it to me snail mail. Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. That's P.O. Box 100, Mill Valley, 94942. We'll pick the winner and announce it on August 1st. Stephen Zunis is a professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. I knew I could get that out. And a frequent contributor to our program. Stephen, welcome back today. How are you?
Pleasure to be back.
Well, I wish we could laugh about things, but this is a very difficult situation in the Middle East. And before I offer you any views of my own, just go ahead and take a minute here to tell us what you think are some of the key issues that people need to reflect on as we observe this continuing military action in both Lebanon and in the Palestinian territories.
Well, first of all, it's interesting to note that Israel holds thousands of Lebanese and Palestinian prisoners that were seized by Israeli forces in Lebanese and Palestinian territory. Some of them are terrorists. Some of them are combatants, but not combatants that target civilians. And some are themselves innocent civilians. So it's ironic that the Bush administration is deciding that the seizure of these two Israeli soldiers on the from the Lebanese-Israeli border and the seizure of that one Israeli soldier in the Gaza-Israel border is such a terrible thing, given that the U.S. has not complained about similar and more massive Israeli kidnappings of Arab parties. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, I think it's fair to say that Hamas and Hezbollah's actions and seizing these Israeli soldiers was wrong and provocative and a lot of other things. The Israeli response, of course, is has been extreme. It has gone well beyond what is necessary to defend themselves. If they wanted to send in a paramilitary unit to try to rescue the soldiers and, if necessary, kill their captors, I don't see anything particularly wrong with that. But this massive bombing of civilian targets, like in Beirut and in various Lebanese towns and villages, the bombing of the international airport, power stations, the major seaport, even an historic lighthouse on the Beirut Esplanade. I mean, none of these were Hezbollah targets. Hezbollah had no control of these facilities whatsoever. This is collective punishment, which is a war crime, according to the Fourth Geneva Convention.
Yeah. And as you look at that, it just in rough terms, the loss of life so far has been roughly 10 to 1, Lebanese and Palestinians
been,
to Israelis?
Yeah, last count, there are about 16 Israeli civilians that were killed in Hezbollah rocket attacks, and well over 200 Lebanese civilians killed in the Israeli airstrikes.
And Stephen, one of the things that I look at is, you know, I can understand the Israeli mentality. I understand that Olmert is he believes he's being tested both domestically and internationally, and I can understand how they respond to a perceived provocation.
Mm-hmm.
But I see this as the unintended consequences that result. That, you know, we had some strong rivalry and a lack of cooperation for the most part between Fatah and Hamas in the Palestinian territories and in the government, even after a number of Hamas officials were elected and won a majority there. And Hezbollah has this very uneasy relationship with the Lebanese government, which, of course, is nascent because they're still recovering from the Syrian occupation. It was only 15 months ago that that Syria pulled out. And so the unintended consequence, in my view, is that by this overreaction and the massive use of maximum force, that Israel is driving these rival factions back together.
Very much so. In fact, it's interesting. Israel, along with the United States, is insisting that the Lebanese army take control throughout southern Lebanon, where Hezbollah militias currently operate. Yet Israel bombed these Lebanese army facilities, killing a number of soldiers. The Lebanese army is essentially powerless in this situation. Israel has total control of the air and is inflicting incredible damage, weakening the pro-Western prime minister, who really wants to bring his country together. And not only that, the United States is rejecting calls for a ceasefire, you know, essentially saying, you know, keep on bombing, keep on killing these people. And of course, the Lebanese government, who's been trying to convince their people to go in a more pro-Western direction and be more supportive of the United States and Western democracies and not support these extremist Islamic groups, you know, their words are falling on deaf ears now, because people are just getting angrier and angrier, and as people are bombed and oppressed and invaded, people will be more likely to support extremist groups. So just as terrorist attacks against Israel, in addition to being wrong morally and legally, are counterproductive and they just harden Israeli attitudes, similarly, Israel's airstrikes are just encouraging the extremists. It's like the United States and Iraq, where they're creating terrorists faster than they can kill them.
Stephen Zunis, to echo a point you made a second ago, this headline is in today's New York Times. U.S. appears to be waiting to act on Israeli airstrikes in Lebanon. And later on today's program, Professor Marjorie Cohn from San Diego will be joining us to talk about the Arms Export Act, which, as I read it, limits the use of American-supplied military weapons, Humvees, aircraft, bombs, missiles, all that stuff, to defensive acts by Israel.
Exactly, or for any country, for that matter. All countries have to go by these provisions. It's an act that has frequently been ignored and is clearly being ignored right now. In a way, to try to remedy that, there is a bipartisan resolution before the House of Representatives, similar to a resolution that passed by a voice vote in the Senate, that declares Israel's actions as being purely defensive and in accordance to Article 51 of the United Nations Charter for Self-Defense. Hmm. Now, I'd be hard-pressed to find any reputable international legal scholar or expert in international law who would agree with this, but apparently it has the overwhelming bipartisan support of Congress. In fact, this resolution goes as far as claiming that Israel is going to great lengths to avoid civilian casualties and praises Israel for its being so careful not to kill civilians. In direct contrast, of course, to what Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and various media reports have been saying. So it appears that the Republicans and Democrats are lining up right behind Bush and Olmert and against the more moderate voices within their own countries that are trying to work for peace.
Well, it's true, and as you know, on this program, we do not protect Democrats just because we happen to be progressives and hope that they will align with our views on a regular basis. But there are far too many Democrats who are siding blindly, I think, with Israel. And you know, there are many different positions that could be taken, nuanced positions, qualified positions. But when it comes to supporting Israel, our politicians, as you point out, of both parties, seem unable to qualify these things and at least put some terms that would cause Israel to respond to the calls of calmer, more rational minds.
Exactly. And it's not a matter of supporting Israel or not supporting Israel. I mean, my own view is that this is bad. I mean, obviously, the Lebanese and Palestinians are suffering the most, but the Israelis are shooting themselves in the foot by doing this. This is not good for Israel either. So I personally think it's a pro-Israel position to say this is wrong, to take a policy of tough love, if you will, unconditional support for Israel's right to exist in peace and security and to defend itself, but say we are not going to tolerate and finance and protect and support policies that are such clear violations of international humanitarian law and are ultimately bad for Israel as well. After all, Hezbollah had not killed a single Israeli civilian since well before Israel's withdrawal from southern Lebanon way back in 2000. But thanks to the Israeli strikes, more than a dozen Israelis dead, civilians dead, and additional soldiers killed as well.
We're talking with Stephen Zunis, professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. We're going to take a quick break and return. If you have a question or comment, feel free to join us. On the Central Coast, a local call, 831-899-5792. Or call me toll-free from anywhere in the continental U.S. That number, 888-579-2540. As we continue, I'll ask Professor Zunis his thoughts on the proxy analysis, the proxy that Hezbollah is doing the bidding of Tehran and Israel doing the bidding of the Bush administration. That's what we'll discuss next, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
"We're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service."
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Tom Hartman.
We have given our electoral process, the franchise by which democracy happens, the most vital part of the commons by which we administer the commons, we have privatized it. We have turned it over to private for-profit corporations.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
And they have no damn business telling us how we voted.
The new Radio Free America, Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. Coming up about 12 minutes away, well, 15 minutes away, we'll get our daily update on the actual news developments in the Middle East from Chris Tonsing of the Middle East Report. And just before we rejoin Professor Stephen Zunis, a quick reminder that tonight is the night that the Center for Constitutional Rights is holding a teach-in about impeachment. The West Coast event is in Oakland at the Grand Lake Theater, and that's right downtown Oakland, 3200 Grand Avenue. Starts at 7 p.m. You can get more information at the website articlesofimpeachment.net. Back now to Professor Zunis from the University of San Francisco. And, Stephen, we've had a number of guests on the program, as you can imagine, over the last week to 9 days, talking about different angles of analysis. And Sam Gardner is a retired Air Force colonel who has given a lot of his time over the past few months to following the developments related to the U.S. showdown with Iran. And I use showdown advisedly because I think it is a bit of a dramatization of the issues, and I think they have been hyped. But Sam was on our program on Monday, and he sees Hezbollah's entry into the fray here as a proxy effort on behalf of Tehran, and it fits a certain line of reasoning that Tehran has agreed to talks starting in August related to its interest in developing what they call our peaceful nuclear power plants and what the U.S. calls the capability to develop nuclear weapons. And also there are people who look at Israel's hard line, the preemptive steps that they took back in February and March, and now this very strong military action. Some people argue it was a plan that was on the books for more than 5 years that was authored by the Sharon administration before Olmert. And so do you buy into these lines of thinking that the current conflict based in southern Lebanon is a proxy war between Iran and the United States?
I think that's oversimplistic, frankly. For one thing, though, the Iranian Revolutionary Guards played an important role in helping to establish Hezbollah 25 years ago, and you know, still maintain some financial and limited military support.
Well, isn't it about $200 million a year?
That sounds a little high to me. It was certainly that high earlier, okay. some years ago. But in any case, it's it seems that they've evolved into an independent Lebanese Shiite political party that is not anybody's proxy. It seems bizarre that they would do something on the orders of Tehran that would bring such incredible death and destruction upon their country. This line, I think, is being hyped by people who just want an excuse to claim that Iran is this great terrorist threat to possibly justify future military strikes against that country. In the other direction, I think that...
Let me stop there for just a second, because that's not Gardner's orientation. He views the Bush administration as wanting a fight with Tehran, and since the ruse around nuclear capabilities didn't really produce the kind of bringing it to a head or a conflict, that this is kind of a second choice.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that the Bush administration wants to approves what Israel's doing. I think Israel, and they've been quite explicit in that. I think this is largely an Israeli initiative, but I think the United States certainly supports it. And this has been building for some time. Just kind of it's an interesting fact here that even though the State Department and the Center for International Studies and the International Crisis Group and CIA, all these groups that monitor terrorist activities, at least in their public reports, don't seem to indicate that Hezbollah has engaged in any form of any terrorist attacks, unless you want to count the recent, obviously sending rockets into Israeli civilian areas, but one could say just as well that Israel's attacks are terrorists as well by that definition. But in any case, the last major terrorist attack they're able to attribute to Hezbollah was back in the early 1990s. And it's interesting how during the 1980s, when Hezbollah and its antecedents were kidnapping and murdering Americans and blowing up things, doing all sorts of terrorism, there was not a single congressional resolution addressing Hezbollah by name. Yet in the past session of Congress, there are over a half dozen of them, including one that claimed that that condemned the ongoing terrorist attacks by Hezbollah. There are only three dissenting votes in the entire House of Representatives. And I asked a number of members of Congress, including Sam Farr in person, if he could name any terrorist attacks by Hezbollah in the past dozen years or so, and he couldn't think of any. But this idea of, I mean, it's like with Iraq, you know, the weaker and weaker Iraq became objectively, the more and more and more the administration and Congress tried to present Iraq as a threat. And similarly with Hezbollah, the less and less of a threat they become, and less involved in terrorism and more in domestic politics in Lebanon, the more and more the U.S. has hyped this supposed Hezbollah threat. And so there's something that makes me think that something bigger is going on here. Whenever you have an inverse relationship between a movement or a government's actual threat and the amount of attention it gets as a threat from Washington, something bigger has to be in the works.
Mm-hmm. Now, there have been a couple of silly moments featuring our president recently. There was the inadvertent microphone open that caught his exchange with Tony Blair and a few others as he rudely ate his food and barked out some, you know, disconnected thoughts. There was this kind of bizarre scene a day later where he gave Angela Merkel a free neck rub that she hadn't asked for and clearly didn't want. But I bring those up because they've drawn attention to the president's behavior and his thought process, such as it is. And when you listen to that clip where he dropped the S-bomb, that's the least of my concerns. In a minute and a half, he traipsed over six or seven different subjects, referred to Blair just as Blair, as if he were a lapdog, and he seemed bizarrely really disconnected from the reality of these events.
Very much so. I mean, what struck me again was the not just that he used an expletive, but he actually seemed to think that Syria could turn Hezbollah on and off like a spigot, which they certainly cannot do, especially since their withdrawal from Lebanon. They don't have any strategic control over the territory, and you know, they really don't have much of a say in what Hezbollah does. And the other bizarre thing was that he literally said that this was that Hezbollah was Hezbollah was responsible for all this and for, you know, firing rockets into Israel, and Israel simply retaliating. But Hezbollah did not fire rockets into Israel until after Israel had started bombing civilian targets in Lebanon. So he's already rewriting history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the whole focus on Syria by Bush and Rice and other administration leaders, how do you read that?
It's really, really rather strange, actually. I mean, Syria initially backed Amal, which was a rival Shiite group that actually battled Hezbollah for a time. They did allow Hezbollah to engage in guerrilla warfare against Israeli occupation forces when Israel refused to withdraw in accordance to a series of UN Security Council resolutions. But they don't have any kind of, you know, day-to-day control over that movement. They never really have.
Well, it is amazing just to see the way Bush has attempted to play this, and I think it will play out over the next few weeks. Do you have a sense if Israel has certain goals, and once they reach them, they'll then start to entertain a ceasefire, start to entertain third-party intervention?
It's hard to say, because I really don't. There doesn't seem much strategic logic to what Israel's doing. I think it's the same kind of racist mentality that, frankly, both the Israeli and American governments have been having. That somehow force is the only language the Arabs understand. And if we destroy enough of a country's civilian infrastructure and we kill enough of their people, they'll simply submit and give in and accept U.S.-Israeli hegemony in the region. And that's just not going to work. Indeed, it's going to create a reaction even stronger and more militant and more extreme against us. And, you know, it's important to remember that Hezbollah did not even exist until after Israel invaded and occupied southern Lebanon and started raining shells and bombs on these Shiite villages. The rise of Hezbollah was a reaction to Israel's earlier attacks on Lebanon. Hamas didn't exist until after many years of Israeli occupation, and they didn't come close to becoming a majority in terms of popular support until the years of the peace process made it clear that Israel was still going to keep building settlements and refused to make possible a viable independent Palestinian state alongside Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense that these militant groups are a reaction to the occupation and repression. Mm-hmm. And how making this this occupation or oppression more brutal will somehow slow their growth just doesn't make any sense.
Stephen, thank you for joining us. I always appreciate talking with you.
My pleasure.
Professor Stephen Zunis, University of San Francisco Professor of Politics. Coming up right after the network news, Chris Tonsing will join us with our daily update from the Middle East Report. And Mark Crispin Miller coming up in the next hour. A Diebold surprise for Cynthia McKinney in Georgia yesterday. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. By the way, Ralph Reed got his own surprise. Didn't come from Diebold.
Hi, this is Ed Schultz, America's number one progressive talker. Join me every weekday from noon to 3 here on KRXA 540. I'm based in Fargo, North Dakota, and we bring you news and views from the heartland of America. I'm fighting the righties every day on behalf of the working people who've made the nation great. Tell your friends to listen. Give me a call toll-free, 1-877-934-6833. The Ed Schultz Show, noon to 3 on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale. At a new time, reality radio can now be heard every Saturday afternoon from 4 to 5. So keep it right here, AM 540, for extraordinary progressive talk. Number one in reality radio, with me, Sheila Gale. There's nothing we won't talk about. See us Saturday, 4 to 5, reality radio right here on AM 540 KRXA.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Safe arrival in Cyprus for the first ship bringing Americans from Lebanon. President Bush vetoes the stem cell bill.
It crosses a moral boundary.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. The chartered cruise ship Orient Queen has arrived in Larnaca, Cyprus, with the first large group of Americans to be evacuated from Lebanon, about 1,000 people. CBS News reporter Amy Gutman is there.
We've just seen the first handful of passengers come off the ship. It's the elderly and the infirm first. We saw the first man off the ship was an elderly man who was carried off, and he's sitting in a chair just outside, just on the port now.
She says everyone looks very tired. By adding more vessels, the State Department plans to bring 2,000 people out tomorrow and 4,000 on Friday. There's late word of a major Israeli airstrike targeting a suspected Hezbollah command bunker in southern Beirut. Israeli warplanes are said to have dropped 23 tons of explosives on the site, believing senior officials, including Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah, might be there. Hezbollah just said none of its leaders or members died in the attack. There was fierce ground fighting today involving Israeli tanks and artillery.
I'm Robert Berger on the Israel-Lebanon border. That's the sound of Israeli artillery pounding suspected Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. Each time one of the big guns opens fire, it leaves a trail of smoke. And I can feel the ground shaking here. This artillery base has been carved out of a field next to an Arab village as the shells are lobbed over a mountain and into Lebanon.
Hezbollah fired missiles into the Israeli city of Nazareth, killing two children. Now this.
Ah, the lazy days of summer. Not for you, they're not. For you, it's go, go, go time. Time for Emergen-C. The natural energy boost packed with vitamin C, B vitamins, minerals, and electrolytes. Add Emergen-C to water to make a fizzy, fruity, super healthy drink. Rehydrate and re-energize with Emergen-C. Find it in the vitamin C supplement section.
Okay, here, distinguished professional. No, distinguished-looking man with a passion for life. No.
Having trouble creating a profile online that is going to attract the attention of your soulmate?
Handsome winner seeks to share his fortune.
At eHarmony.com, our scientific compatibility profile does the work for you. Log on today, and if you are a first-time member, you can try eHarmony for 7 days absolutely risk-free. eHarmony.com.
President Bush, determined to prevent more human embryos from being used in stem cell research, cast a veto today.
It's the president's first veto.
I will not allow our nation to cross this moral line.
As he announced the action, the president repeatedly pointed to ethical concerns.
In our zeal for new treatments and cures, America must never abandon our fundamental morals.
In a sign of his strong opposition to the measure, the president killed it soon after it reached his desk. He wants government agencies to find what he describes as moral stem cell research. Peter Mayer, CBS News, The White House.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill, where there was anger and dismay at the president's veto, but not enough votes to override it. Iowa Democratic Senator Tom Harkin said Mr. Bush was ignorant on the science and cruel.
It's cruel because it denies hope to millions of people suffering in this country. Hope to people who are suffering from Alzheimer's and juvenile diabetes, spinal cord injuries.
A number of key Republicans opposed the president on this, including Senate leader Bill Frist. And Democrats warned those who stuck with him against this research could pay a price at the polls in November. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
The House today voted to shield the Pledge of Allegiance from federal judges who might try to strike the words "under God." The measure's prospects in the Senate are uncertain. Wall Street had something to celebrate today, some encouraging comments from Ben Bernanke. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christopher says the Fed chairman told Congress there are signs economic growth is moderating.
Ben Bernanke unleashed the bulls on Wall Street. He finally told investors what they wanted to hear. He gave us the biggest hint yet in his 6 months on the job as Fed chief that the Fed may indeed be done raising interest rates.
The Dow had a 212-point gain to close above 11,000. Other positive influences today, strong earnings from IBM and J.P. Morgan Chase and declining oil prices. Crude settled below $73 a barrel. Walmart won a legal victory today. A federal judge struck down a new Maryland law that required the retailer to provide health insurance for every one of its employees in that state. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Guess the number one vacation spot this summer.
The Strip in Vegas?
Nope, it's number 5.
Oh, okay, Disneyland.
Number 18.
Niagara Falls?
38.
How do you know all this?
Priceline's 50-50 hotel savings event. You can book a hotel at one of the top 50 vacation spots, name your own price, and save up to 50% off.
Ah, so what's number one?
You'll just have to go to Priceline and find out.
Priceline, more ways to save. Exact hotel shown only after purchase.
Why do I like working for Verizon Wireless? For one thing, I love the challenge of managing new projects every day, all designed to make our network stronger and more efficient, and making sure we reach every milestone. But also, I love the flexibility. Whether I need training to learn a new skill or time to spend with my family, Verizon Wireless works as hard for me as I work for my customers. I'm Marlene Chua, Senior Technical Analyst. Our people, our network, Verizon Wireless. We never stop working for you.
At Port Canaveral.
We're ready for another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. Hope you are. I'm Peter B., 6 minutes past the hour. Coming up later this hour, our weekly visit with Larissa Alexandrovna from RawStory.com. Last week she told us about the new UN report about torture, and there are more details on torture being applied inside the United States to U.S. citizens in some cases. We'll get the details. Also, in just a few minutes, Mark Crispin Miller will join us. Cynthia McKinney, the sometimes outrageous congresswoman from Georgia, got an outrageous result in the primary in Georgia yesterday, and Diebold machines are the suspected culprit. We'll talk about that coming up shortly. But first, we get our daily update from Chris Tonsing of the Middle East Report. They're online at merip.org. Chris, thanks for joining us today. What's news in the Middle East?
Thanks for having me, Peter.
Sure.
Well, the war between Israel and Hezbollah is still ongoing and picking up steam, unfortunately. More rockets launched at Israel today and large raids launched recently upon Lebanon. There were a massive bombing raid in South Beirut targeting a bunker where Israel suspected Hezbollah figures of hiding. Hezbollah has said that none of their leaders were hurt in the attack.
And CNN describes it as 23 tons of bombs.
Right. Israel has also been warning residents of southern Lebanese villages to flee in preparation for what one would presume is going to be truly massive bombing down there, perhaps, although one sees no sign of this yet, in preparation for some kind of larger ground operation in South Lebanon to look for rocket launching pads and the like. there's no progress on the diplomatic front. It's become clear that that Israel has a green light, a blaring, flashing green light from the White House to continue the bombing as long as they see fit, or at least for about 10 or 14 more days. Condoleezza Rice is supposed to go to the region, but they're refusing to set a date certain for that. It may come as soon as Sunday, but they're saying that that visit may be postponed as circumstances dictate.
Now, on the 10 to 14 days, is that built around a set of goals, a set of tasks, just the amount of time?
Israel's military goals, which at this stage still seem to be limited to wiping Hezbollah out as a fighting force and thereby severely diminishing its power in Lebanese politics, and effectively implementing Resolution 1559.
Very interesting. And have there been any new developments on the diplomatic front? You mentioned that the U.S. is still hedging on when Secretary Rice might go to the region. Are other nations holding back as well?
Well, Tony Blair, as well the British Prime Minister, today actually moved his position closer to the U.S. position. It's been that way for a couple days now, saying that there's no call for a ceasefire now, that a ceasefire would be premature. That's exactly the U.S. line. That is at odds with the position of the U.S.'s major Arab allies, as well as other European nations. Since what the U.S. says generally is what passes as law, that's probably what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. A little bit later on in the program, we're going to be joined by Professor Marjorie Cohn. She teaches constitutional law at the Thomas Jefferson School in San Diego. We're going to talk a little bit about the Arms Export Act. Has anybody raised that issue in a significant way, in your view?
Well, peace and justice groups always raise that issue quite properly. Here we have the Bush administration and Israel making accusations about Iran and or Syria pulling the strings of Hezbollah on the basis that some of the missiles they're using are of Syrian and Iranian manufacture. But, of course, a large part of the Israeli Army and Air Force weaponry is manufactured in the United States or based on American designs and purchased from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So you would be just as justified in accusing the United States of pulling Israel's strings if your only evidence and your only logic is who supplied the weapons. But the point is that under the terms of the Arms Export Control Act, weapons supplied by the United States to foreign militaries are not to be used in operations that it targets civilians or puts civilians at undue risk or are used in an illegal manner. And the vastly disproportionate nature of Israel's response, including the targeting of civilian infrastructure, clearly qualifies their military actions for censure under the Arms Export Control Act.
Mm-hmm. And, Chris, anything you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Well, simply that a ceasefire is becoming more and more urgent as a humanitarian crisis in Lebanon starts to unfold. The Lebanese government earlier today announced that upwards of 300 people, mostly civilians, have been killed in Lebanon in this bombardment. And the Lebanese prime minister also said that 500,000 people have been internally displaced, the vast bulk of them from the south of Lebanon, where the bombing is probably worse than we know because so few journalists are down there.
Yeah.
And with this new leafleting and by the Israeli Air Force today, this evening, it probably will lead to a big swelling of those numbers of displaced people. And with the infrastructure being so severely damaged, with it being very difficult to move supplies around the country, there's a real danger of a pretty severe humanitarian crisis, as there is any time there's such a big displaced population. So a ceasefire is really, really important, and so that Lebanon can recover, begin the long, painful process of recovering, I should say, from this massive attack.
Chris, we're planning to move on here, but our next guest, Mark Crispin Miller, is not a single-issue guy. Joe, go ahead and put on Mark Crispin Miller, because he had a question for you, and I just thought I'd let him ask it himself. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Doing fine. What did you want to ask Chris Tonsing?
I didn't have a question for him.
Oh. Oh, okay. Well, I
feel very much edified by what he's had to say. And
okay, I just figured it out. I got a note on my screen. It was actually Stephen Zunis who posed the question.
Oh.
He wanted to know what NATO is doing to try to ameliorate this conflict right now. Chris?
Perhaps I'm not aware. I don't have any information on that. I may have missed that news item.
I'm not aware of anything either, so I think so far that may be the correct answer.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, great. Thanks. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
All right, that's Chris Tonsing at the Middle East Report online at merip.org. Now to Mark Crispin Miller. Welcome, Mark.
Hi. You have anything else you want me to ask?
Well, I got a note on the screen that said guest has a question, and so I assumed it was the next guest, not
That's
the preceding
okay.
one.
That's okay. I felt speechless for a change.
Okay, good. Because you're a man of words. I saw the multimedia show that you did a couple of years ago. You're a very talented guy who expresses yourself in many different directions. Today I asked you to come on to comment on the debolding, that is now a verb, of Cynthia McKinney's primary reelection in the state of Georgia. Now, we got one blessing that may not have come from debold because Ralph Reed was defeated yesterday.
Yes.
But we understand that voters in McKinney's district, more than one, reported that when they hit the touchscreen on the DRE machine to choose Cynthia McKinney, her opponent's name instead was selected.
That's right. She ought to have won handily enough so that she wouldn't have to face a runoff. But her victory margin was significantly reduced, in part, at least, because of this vote flipping, which seems to have gone on down in her district. And let me make clear that this is a sad old song to those of us who are involved in election reform. All over Ohio in 2004, for example, there were scores of reports of machines flipping people's votes from Kerry to Bush.
Mm-hmm.
There was a state senator from Youngstown named Jim Hagan, who has come forward to say that when he voted in the election, the machine flipped his vote from Kerry to Bush. Now, what's interesting about his experience is that he told the Kerry campaign about it, and their response was, keep this to yourself. Don't talk about it. This is not something we want to call attention to. Now, that kind of thing, that systematic vote flipping that affects one candidate only, actually went on nationwide. If you know, my book on the election, Fooled Again,
How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One, Too, Unless We Stop Them, longest subtitle in American publishing history.
That's right, but with a hopeful bit at the end. my book documents this kind of thing happening all over the country. And I'm not a Democrat. I want to make that clear to your listeners. I'm a proud independent, and I'm from Chicago, so nobody has to tell me that Democrats have stolen elections.
I got my political education in Chicago, too.
There you go. So we know, you know, in fact, what the Bush Republicans did in 2004 was take Daley's tactics to a whole new level, it seems to me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, not being a Democrat, I looked very carefully for examples of machines flipping votes from Bush to Kerry.
Right.
Because if it were a glitch, then statistically it would have to be, you know, fairly equal. Well, I found four cases nationwide. I believe they're all in Texas, of people who claim their machines flipped Bush votes to Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
But there are hundreds, probably thousands of reports of people's votes being flipped to Republican from Democratic. So what's happening to Cynthia McKinney is not a surprise to me, and if it's an accident, then it's a miraculous accident, because the likelihood of it's happening is minuscule.
We got to take a break. We'll return and talk further with Mark Crispin Miller. If you have a question or comment about elections, there are a lot of them. You can call me now, 831-899-5792 Central Coast, or toll-free 888-579-2540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, meet Louis Basil of Jamestown Real Estate. And joining Louis will be Ronnie Bramer of New Horizon Real Estate Group of St. Petersburg, Florida. Ronnie and Louis will be sharing some great hot spots to invest in Florida and Louisville, Kentucky. That's this week on Rock Rollin' Real Estate. Heard every Sunday morning at 10. Listen online at rockrollinrealestate.com. For more information on this show and to be a guest, call 408-892-3376. 408-892-3376.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's a taste you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a killer affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
KRXA 540 traffic, time now 421. We get the latest from Ashley Lane. Hello, Ashley.
Hello there. Good afternoon, everyone. Let's start with a road hazard. This is northbound 101 at Morrill Road. An orange container on the roadway. It looks like there's gas reportedly spilling out. Emergency crews responding there. In San Jose, southbound 85 at Saratoga Sunnyvale, an earlier four-car crash blocking the middle of the roadway. That's been cleared from the roadway. And also southbound 101 before Coyote Creek Golf Drive, a tire reported blocking the fourth lane from your left. Visit Mattress Discounters, and for a limited time, save up to $250 on select Simmons Beautyrest and Sealy Posturepedic mattress sets. Mattress Discounters, have a good night's sleep or less. Ashley Lane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Ashley. We'll check back with you in about a half an hour right here.
Okay.
And Casey's got your traffic every weekday morning on the Stephanie Miller Show, 6 to 9 a.m.
Let's do it.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 21 minutes past the hour. Just two items related to elections and voting machines. In Ohio, the state of my birth, in Cuyahoga County, the May primary election, they found out that the optical scanners made by Diebold made some paper ballots unreadable. The county's first election using the touchscreen and optical scan voting machines. And that's not all. In Georgia, Cynthia McKinney, she is controversial and a magnet for criticism. And just a few years back, she was targeted by fellow Democrats for elimination. They actually knocked her out for 2 years, and she made a big comeback. Then, of course, she had the cell phone incident with a Capitol Police officer. Didn't play so well, a lot of negative publicity. But that doesn't explain her failure to capture 50% of the vote yesterday, and it forces her into a runoff in August. And we're talking with Mark Crispin Miller, the author of Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One, Too, Unless We Stop Them. And if we have time, we'll talk about his prescription for avoiding a November surprise this year. But Mark, let's finish up on the McKinney race.
Okay.
Does she have an opportunity to challenge these results, or is she just stuck with the need for a runoff?
Well, she can challenge them, but it's extremely difficult in Georgia, where the voting system has essentially been privatized. But this is the same state where, you'll remember, Max Cleland ought to have been reelected as senator in 2002.
Yeah, we got Saxby Chambliss.
We got Saxby Chambliss for no apparent reason, because Cleland was a very popular guy in Georgia, a war hero, a triple amputee, an effective senator. And to everybody's amazement, he lost at the same year that in four other states, far right-wing candidates surprisingly lost, and they used Diebold machines. You know, there is definitely a pattern here.
Yeah.
I think it would be extremely difficult for McKinney to you know, get the machinery moving there to come up with any kind of a meaningful recount or a challenge, because it's extremely hard. And let's remember that with Diebold machines, there is no paper ballot to count.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the most frightening things about computerized voting. Even if there is a paper receipt, which some people regard as a panacea, the machines can very easily be programmed to have your receipt say one thing,
yep,
while the machine itself, you know, records a different vote.
Yeah,
so, I mean, you know, my view is we need to go to paper ballots. That's, I think, the cleanest and sanest course we can take. But it's a superficial solution to a deeper problem, which is that American democracy is under siege. The movement that runs this country is profoundly hostile to democracy. If it weren't the machines, it would be any number of other tactics used to disenfranchise the American electorate.
Let's go then to District 50 in San Diego,
yes,
Southern California, the Busby-Bilbray race. And Brad Friedman has done a great job of covering the issues, the sleepovers of the machines. They were out of secure control for anywhere from 1 to 6 days. And there are other anomalies that have occurred. Have you followed that, and what's your opinion?
Well, I have followed it, and I am indebted to Brad Friedman, too, whose work on this has been terrific. That's bradblog.com.
Oh, indeed. He's with us every week.
Oh, okay. Good. I just got a very interesting email today. It comes from a woman who tried to vote right in the heart of that district where they don't have machines. People can find this email on my blog, which is just markcrispinmiller.com.
Okay.
She gives an account of trying to vote, and basically her vote and her husband's vote were forcibly taken from them while they were online and jammed into the provisional ballot box. She tells the whole story of how and why this happened, but the long and short of it is these votes are sure to be disqualified because they weren't filled out as provisional ballots. The point here is that what we're seeing in San Diego is a very, very obvious attempt to contradict the will of the electorate by restoring the incumbent to his... Oh, he's not the incumbent. He's the Republican, Bilbray.
He's pretty close to a clone.
Yeah, yes, I know. It's Duke Cunningham's seat.
Right.
The point I'm making here is that although it is a Republican district, there is enough quite flagrant evidence of impropriety,
mm-hmm,
that, you know, it was shocking that the Democratic candidate herself, Francine Busby, refused to make an issue of it, at least,
yeah,
at first.
Yeah.
And this is the problem with the Democrats. They too seem insufficiently devoted to the spirit of American democracy.
That's true.
And I'm a purist on this. I don't care if a candidate is someone I detest. If people really voted for him or her, that person should serve. That's just as simple as that.
The one exception in my book is Jan Schakowsky, Democratic representative from Chicago, who has not only acknowledged RFK Jr.'s article and that the Ohio election of 2004 was stolen, as you have established in your book, but also she apologized to people like you and Brad and others who have been flogging this issue to deaf ears from too many Democrats.
That's absolutely...
Mark, let me just jump in, a minute remaining. I wanted you to give us a quick bullet point summary of the article, How to Preempt a November Surprise, which is flying all over the web today.
Okay. Well, Tom Hartman was talking to a GOP insider who told him off the record that what the Republicans plan to do if they should lose control of either the House or the Senate is to pick as many of the races as they need the closest races and start screaming bloody murder about election fraud, which is perverse, because they're the biggest perpetrators of such fraud in this millennium, but entirely typical. It's a kind of swift voting.
I was about to say that. Go ahead.
So they will basically be using the work of people like me and Brad as the basis for a spirited propaganda drive meant to blame the Democrats for election fraud. And the Democrats have been not only silent on the subject, but, you know, have acquiesced in all kinds of terrible stuff that the other side has done.
Right, Mark, I got to stop now. We're out of time, but let's direct people to your website, markcrispinmiller.com, Crispin, C-R-I-S-P-I-N. Let's talk again soon.
Anytime you say, Peter. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Larissa Bye-bye. Alexandrova joins us next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is hands down the finest Volvo maintenance and repair shop in Monterey County. Owners Mike Brooks and Tracy Palacco are both factory trained in Volvo service and repair. They provide outstanding quality and great service at reasonable prices. They only work on Volvos, so you know that your Volvo will be in caring and skilled hands. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside, or you can call Mike and Tracy at 583-9820. That's 583-9820. In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. Coming up next hour, we open up the phones in the free speech zone to hear your thoughts and comments. And we're standing by to connect with our roving investigative reporter and the managing editor of RawStory.com, Larissa Alexandrovna. She joins us every week about this time. And when she does join us, we'll get details from her on torture of suspects in the United States. Just like we've done at Gitmo and Abu Ghraib. Next hour, as we mentioned, free speech available to you. We'll be taking your calls and we'll get some free speech from our house counsel. Attorney Marjorie Cohn, a professor of constitutional law, will join us next hour to comment on the Arms Export Act and how it could be applied to Israel in the current conflict. And I want to remind you that we are in the midst of observing our first anniversary. It was 1 year ago this week we launched the PBC show on KRXA 540 in Monterey. Over the past year, we've grown to four stations in great cities, and I'm delighted that you're listening wherever you happen to be. And if you're within the sound of my voice, live or otherwise, you can help celebrate our first anniversary. We're giving away a case of fine Central Coast wine. Nothing in a box, Stephanie Miller. These are bottles from select vintners in Monterey County in the Santa Cruz Mountains, courtesy of our friends at Monterey Bay Wine Company. If you'd like to participate, just drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. Include your name, address, a daytime phone, and indicate that you're at least 21, you know, legal drinking age. That'll keep the ABC from knocking on my door. And tell me your most memorable moment of the Peter B. Collins Show over the past year. One entry per person, please. If you don't have email, you can send it to me in the mail. The U.S. Postal Service will cooperate. Just address it to P.O. Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. That's Box 100, Mill Valley, 94942. We'll hold the drawing and announce the winner on August 1st. And we know that Larissa is out somewhere in this great land of ours investigating some news. So if she doesn't join us in the next couple of minutes, we'll be able to deal with that. If you'd like to just call me and talk about issues in the news, you're welcome to do so. Maybe you want to talk about the stem cell veto, the very first veto by George W. Bush, or the ongoing conflict in the Middle East. Those are two of the topics that we've been discussing. Or maybe you want to talk about Diebold and the McKinney race in Georgia. Those are all up for grabs, or you can bring up a topic of your own. Lines available at 831-899-5792 or toll-free 1-888-579-2540, 888-579-2540. I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's about a five-hour drive to Chicago. And I made the trip when I was 17, drove up with a high school buddy of mine to investigate Northwestern University, where I was eventually accepted and did some studying, among other things. My first introduction to Chicago and to its fabulous police force was on that very first trip when I was 17. I was driving my mom's Rambler Classic. And I got into a traffic situation that was going to put me on an expressway, a freeway, and I had no idea where it was going. And so at the last minute, I made a U-turn to adjust my course. And a blue flashing light was visible in my rearview mirror within seconds. And two of Chicago's finest pulled me over. I remember seeing the inscription on the door of the police car, "To serve and protect. And in Chicago, the word protect and the word protection have very special meaning to the cops there. And I learned that in my very first encounter. Because the police officer who pulled me over for that illegal U-turn tried to shake me down. Yeah, he wanted cash. I'm a 17-year-old kid. I had about 30 bucks in my wallet. And I had a gasoline credit card that my dad had loaned me. And that's all I needed to travel. And he was stunned that here he went to the trouble to shake down a kid from Ohio, and all I had was 30 bucks. And he spurned my offer to actually pay him off. And he threatened my friend, Ed, saying, you guys got to have more money than that, otherwise you're going to wind up in the S house. Yeah, that same word that Bush used in St. Petersburg. So that episode ended okay, but I certainly learned a lesson. And then I went to Northwestern, and then I worked in radio in Chicago for a number of years before I moved to the West Coast. And over the course of that time, I had quite an education into the tactics and techniques of the Chicago Police Department. Police, the O is optional. This was during the final years of Mayor Daley Sr.'s 5.5 terms in office. And, the game was being played to the max, to the hilt. And at one time, one of my radio DJ buddies was buying Colombian gold, that's weed if you don't know about it, from a Chicago cop. He had the very best stuff. And he would deliver it to this DJ in a cop car, in uniform. And he was later actually busted by the Internal Investigative Division, the IID of the Chicago Police Department, and was one of the rare people who was actually bumped off the force for activities like that. But what I'm leading up to is that Larissa Alexandrovna has been digging in to the shadow report that will be published by the Human Rights a division of the United Nations. It's a complicated, long title, but the UN Human Rights Committee will be discussing it at hearings that started the other day in Geneva, Switzerland, and ultimately a report will be published. And what it cites is that in the United States of America, there has been rather widespread use of what we call torture in the treatment of suspects in criminal cases in Chicago, Illinois. The case that has become best known is the Burge cases. A cop named John Burge and homicide detectives of Areas 2 and 3 in Chicago have been charged with torturing nearly 200 African-American men over a 19-year period ending in 1991. Admissions by detectives, eyewitness accounts, and other evidence have indicated that Burge and his men systematically tortured individuals during interrogations. And it proves that officers throughout the chain of command were aware of the torture and condoned its practice. Evidence provided in the Burge case paints a picture not unlike what has emerged from Abu Ghraib, or allegations relating to abuse at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The techniques detailed in Chicago included electrically shocking men's genitals, ears, and lips with a cattle prod or electric shock box, suffocating individuals with plastic bags, mock executions, and beatings with telephone books and rubber hoses. Now, no one has been convicted in any of these cases because of the statute of limitations. Some men have even been promoted, with the exception of Burge, who was fired, but he continues to receive his pension. An internal report prepared by the City of Chicago confirms accounts of prisoner confessions having been elicited by torture. Subsequent reviews of the 193 known cases have found that Burge and his detectives violated Article 1 of the Convention Against Torture on a routine basis. And in addition, not a single officer or member of the chain of command has been prosecuted for acts of torture or conspiracy. So this is just one example, and there may be many more. We don't know. But I think it's important for us to take a hard look at the tactics that have been used. There was a big scandal in Los Angeles a few years ago. I think it was called Ramparts. And there was a team of cops who were given the green light to use very aggressive tactics on gang members and drug dealers. And the result was a police operation that was running way out of control, and a number of convictions were overturned, and a number of cops were convicted of violations of the rules and the law. And these are not, unfortunately, isolated examples. And we pride ourselves on a criminal justice system that honors the rights of the accused, that requires our police officers to operate at all times within the law. And so when you see what's happened since 9/11, the Patriot Act, the broad expansion of police powers at virtually every level of government, the power grab by George W. Bush, one example that was demonstrated by his toady, Attorney General Gonzalez, in testimony on Capitol Hill yesterday, where he explained that Bush has personally intervened to block investigations of the NSA spying program. Talking about the one that the New York Times revealed last November, and that Bush refers to as if Al-Qaeda is calling an American, we want to know why. And Gonzalez flatly stated yesterday that there will be no investigation because the investigators will not be granted security clearances to conduct the investigation. That's right. They're using red tape that they control to prevent a thorough investigation. And the inspectors who would ordinarily do this have operated with great success and maintaining security in the past on a number of sensitive issues, and they have been told that they can't go forward to investigate the NSA program because Bush will not give them the security clearances. It's a catch-22 of his own device, and I find it quite offensive. So it looks like we won't hear from Larissa today, and that's fine. We have a guilt-free approach to our guests because, after all, they don't get paid anything. So we're grateful for the time they give us. And that means in the next few minutes, I can open up the phone lines and talk with you about any subject in the news. So grab a line and let's chat. 831-899-5792 or toll-free at 888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540, and we'll pick up there in just a moment as we continue here on the Peter B. Collins Show today. You can drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com, and that could qualify you for the case of wine we're giving away here on our first anniversary. 45 minutes past the hour here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyet, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Hi, Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary, our 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, montereylimos.com. Our corporate transportation program offers competitive rates, we answer the phone 24/7, and you get a real person. And we have the best professional chauffeurs. We cover all the airports including San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland, and Monterey. We can help plan your company's VIP meeting or employee outing to the ballgame. Let us take the worry and hassle out of your transportation or event. 625-5363 or montereylimos.com.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with great news. I have a new time slot. Reality Radio can be heard every Saturday afternoon now from 4 to 5, so keep it right here, AM 540, for extraordinary progressive talk. With me, Sheila Gale, number one in Reality Radio. There's nothing we won't talk about. Saturdays, 4 to 5 p.m., sponsored in part by Primerica Financial Services. Call Joe and Phyllis at the Marina office for your free consultation. See you Saturday on KRXA.
KRXA 540 looks at your traffic situation right now at Metro Traffic. Here's Ashley Lane.
Good afternoon, everyone. We have an accident in Gilroy. This is 152 at Ferguson. Looks like a tanker spilled some oil on the roadway. That's in the intersection. Emergency crews are responding to the scene. They're putting out orange cones, so you can expect some delays in that area. Otherwise, we have some typical slowing south on Highway 1, slows between Monterey and Carmel. Also, eastbound Highway 25 flows out of Gilroy into Hollister. Come in to Sleep Train today, and you'll sleep free till 2008 on approved credit when you purchase any premium mattress set. Sleep Train is your ticket to a better night's sleep. Ashley Lane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thank you, Ashley. We'll check back with you in about a half an hour. And coming up right after 6 o'clock, it's Barry Lynn, the Reverend Barry Lynn, and Culture Shocks, right here on KRXA 540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm glad you're listening. Yeah, that's the way I like it. Lines are open as we head into the free speed zone, and it'll be interrupted just once by Marjorie Cohn coming up at about 5:30. So your calls and comments are welcome. You know the rules, any subject, any viewpoint from anywhere within the sound of my voice. Millie in Aptos, thanks for your call. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I don't want to give the impression that I am not very sympathetic to the Palestinian cause when I ask you your opinion on what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been very sympathetic to their cause. Mainly, this is just a forethought. I'm going to get to the point. Mainly because in 1946... and maybe towards the end of 45, U.S. and Britain arranged for shipboats, boatloads of survivors, Jewish survivors and others who were able to make the trip to the port of Haifa and simply dumped them into that land, correct?
I think that's a fair characterization. I don't know about dumped, but there was a mass movement of people actually prior to the partitioning of Palestine.
And ironically, people were already living there, as you know and I know, but it seems like a lot of Americans think that it was a desert with no inhabitants. But,
well, I've met older Palestinians who still have the keys to their homes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, it started off in a very bad way with the U.S. and Britain pouring the ways to gain military superiority on the Israelis. Okay, and I don't know whether it was the Israeli president who had the stroke or the current president who made the magnanimous gesture, I mean really big time, of removing the settlers from Gaza. Am I correct?
Well, magnanimous might be overstating. It is Sharon, the one in a coma, who you're referring to.
Yeah, okay.
And he talked about a unilateral withdrawal from portions of Gaza at the same time that he was building a fence that makes an incursion on existing Palestinian territory, the wall, as it's called, and, you know, he wasn't planning to remove all of the settlements, but, yes, it was a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I thought it was rather amazing that it happened, and I didn't understand that all of the settlers did not leave.
No. And consider it a PR package because, you know, with it came, you know, very tough terms, rather unilateral in terms that benefit Israel.
Well, was that wall ever built?
Oh, yeah. It's under construction, and I think it's effective in some respects in reducing the risk of suicide bombers, but I don't believe it will ever eliminate it because Israel requires labor from Palestinians, and you know, they will over time find ways to permit the free flow, or at least a freer flow of traffic back and forth between Israel and Palestine.
I see. So then tell me if I'm right about this. The election occurred a while back, and Hamas got in, correct?
That is correct. The election was last December or January.
Yeah.
And the Palestinian leader had offered to postpone the election because he knew that it wasn't going to go in favor of Fatah. And the U.S., of course, were committed to democracy, so we prodded him to continue, and then we didn't like the result, and we proceeded along with Israel to take preemptive steps to isolate the Hamas representatives in the government, to weaken their hand by cutting off the flow of Palestinian tax revenue that comes through Israel. It's their money that Israel has been not giving them, and other methods that they use to put the pressure and the squeeze on the operators in Palestine.
Well, you know what? This is very important that you're saying all this because there is so much misunderstanding regarding this whole current mess, why it's happened and everything else.
Well, I agree, and partisans, start their narrative at a point that is favorable to them. And, of course, we can't go all the way back to 1948, and I don't mind discussing the history, but in terms of trying to resolve the current conflict, we really can't replay what occurred in 1948 or even in 1968.
But I think why things have happened.
I agree. It is instructive to understand the depths of it. But, likewise, we need to find a point of entry in this debate that doesn't require a neener-neener where they say, well, but they attacked us. Well, they attacked us. Let's just agree that both sides have operated outside of a moral or, other boundaries, and we've got to find a way to get back inside those boundaries. I want to thank you for your call, Millie. Lots of people on the line, so let's move on next to Jerry in Carmel. Hello, Jerry. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I caught your little bit about torture in Chicago, and I had to grin because I practiced law as a criminal defense lawyer for quite a number of years in Chicago, and I had quite a number of clients who would tell me how they were treated by the police, and there were certain cases where the prosecutors had a hand in some of the physical abuse,
really?
Believe it or not. And, of course, in those instances where they got a little bit out of control and you could prove that the abuse took place, oftentimes they lost those forced confessions, and so in a sense justice was derailed as a result of their injustice. But
mm-hmm.
It was whatever that lady is or whatever that investigation is uncovered, I'm just calling to say that I have no doubt about its veracity.
Well, you can read the details at rawstory.com, and the reporter is Larissa Alexandrovna, a long Russian name. I won't spell it for you, but it is spelled the way it sounds.
There you go.
But I do think it's worth taking a look at there, Jerry, and I thank you for your affirmation there. What made you decide to leave Chicago?
I was too long in that business.
Oh, yeah?
Well, it takes a little piece of your soul, every one of those cases.
It does. I left as a fugitive because I had about $500 worth of parking tickets.
Oh, well, no, I went through that myself. I had about $3,000 at one time.
Really?
Oh, sure. I got the Denver boot, and I think I worked a deal out of it. I paid the $1,500 and got the boot off. But that was back when you could make a deal on your parking tickets. But, I describe myself as a recovering lawyer now, so it's all behind me. But it was quite an interesting couple of decades.
I'm glad you got out alive.
There you go.
Thank you, Jerry. Billy in Santa Cruz, thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Well, for me, it was about 100 tickets for riding without a helmet with my motorcycle.
In Chicago?
Philly.
Oh, Philly. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's why everybody comes to California.
Well, and there was no helmet law when you came to California, and now there is.
Exactly.
And you know what, Billy?
That's how they get you.
I don't like the helmet law. I've got a motorcycle, and I think if I want to ride and let the wind go through my formerly hairy pate, then I should be allowed to.
Yeah. How come everybody, like us, ends up bald? What is it? Are we too smart?
I guess so, but I don't know. It's in the genes.
So, as a Bush hater, today was a good day. The guy just never failed to disappoint, does he?
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised by his posture on the stem cell bill. It does, it hurts because I know people who really are hopeful about this. People who have children with ALS, people who have parents with Alzheimer's, people who are facing a lifetime of insulin shots with diabetes.
We're talking millions of people are were screwed today.
Right.
And then, on the other side of this, of course, I mean, what makes it so just disgusting is this, how we're killing kids in Iraq, ours and theirs, which has no sense at all. So we prize these 12 cells above real live kids. I cry every time I see that Challenger blow up.
Yeah.
Those five great Americans die. But we lose a Challenger every damn day. Why doesn't anybody give a damn about this?
We only value life before it enters society.
Preborn.
Yeah.
That's just so disgusting.
Ellie, you know the rules.
So
I'm out of time. Thanks for your call today. We'll talk again soon. More calls coming up in the Free Speech Zone. You could be next. 888-579-2540. I'm Peter B.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The first large group of American evacuees from Lebanon has arrived in Larnaca, Cyprus, aboard the chartered cruise ship Orient Queen. CBS News reporter Amy Gutman reports the first people off were the sick and elderly, some on stretchers.
It did take a while to start disembarking the rest of the passengers, but now it's a steady stream. We're seeing entire families, young children, couples, lots of strollers.
The U.S. State Department had counselors ready to help the evacuees find hotel rooms and flights home. From Tel Aviv, CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv reports the Israelis launched a major airstrike in southern Beirut tonight.
A military official here says dozens of Israeli planes were involved in this raid, dropping 23 tons of explosives on one target, a bunker where some of Hezbollah's top leaders are believed to have taken shelter. That Shiite Muslim group says the Israeli bombs actually hit nothing important, just a construction site for a mosque in a neighborhood already heavily damaged.
Hezbollah denies that any of its leaders were killed. Two Israeli children were killed today by Hezbollah missiles fired at the holy city of Nazareth. President Bush cast his very first veto today, blocking a bill that would expand federal support for embryonic stem cell research.
If this bill were to become law, American taxpayers would, for the first time in our history, be compelled to fund the deliberate destruction of human embryos. And I'm not going to allow it.
Supporters of the measure say the embryos left over after fertility treatments would otherwise be discarded. But late today, they were unable to muster enough votes in the House to override.
The yeas are 235 and the nays are 193. Two-thirds not having voted in the affirmative, the bill is rejected.
The veto stands.
Earlier today, the House passed a symbolic measure to shield the Pledge of Allegiance from interference by federal judges. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss has that.
Upset that a federal court in California ruled school children shouldn't recite the phrase "Under God" in the Pledge of Allegiance, House Republicans passed a bill stripping federal courts of all jurisdiction over any cases involving the pledge. State courts could still hear them, but under this bill, their decisions could never be appealed to the Supreme Court. It's not likely the Senate will even take this bill up before the Congress adjourns.
Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke moved the market today. The Dow rose 212 points, back over 11,000, after he told Congress that the slowing economy should keep inflation under control. But Bernanke refused to rule out more interest rate hikes because of the volatile energy situation.
Expectations of a leveling out of oil prices have been consistently disappointed in recent years. And as the experience of the past week suggests, possible increases in these and other commodity prices remain a risk to the inflation outlook.
Oil prices are declining after last week's run-up. Today, crude fell to $72.90 a barrel. This is CBS News.
Seems like everyone is making money in real estate these days. Everyone but you, right? You can start making a profit in real estate immediately without using any of your own money. Since 1946, the legendary real estate expert A.D. Kessler has been making big money in real estate. And now he'll share with you his time-tested, proven methods in his straightforward how-to video free.
This is A.D. Kessler. Suppose I could show you a way to get rich, stay rich, and enjoy being rich for the rest of your life with Creative Real Estate. Is there any reason why you wouldn't listen? Call right now, and I'll send you my free video on how to make $130,000 a year, doing only one deal a month without using any of your own money.
Call 800-953-9790 and get A.D. Kessler's Nuts and Bolts Creative Real Estate video absolutely free. Learn how to get quick cash now, doing win-win deals the A.D. Kessler way, with no cash down. Call now for this limited-time free offer. Call 800-953-9790. Create the success you deserve. Call 800-953-9790.
A Maryland law aimed at forcing Walmart to provide health care for all its employees in the state has been struck down by a federal judge. WBAL Radio's Robert Lang reports.
In a 32-page decision, federal judge J. Frederick Motz wrote Walmart faces threatened injury from the Maryland law requiring it to spend at least 8% of its payroll on employee health care or else pay the difference in higher taxes. State House Speaker Michael Bush, who led the effort to override Governor Robert Ehrlich's veto of the measure, says without the law, Walmart will leave its employees without adequate health care and other companies will have to pay for it.
And every large corporation that doesn't pay into for their health care benefits, ultimately all the other corporations of the state pick up their costs. Of healthcare.
Maryland was the first state in the nation to enact such a law. Robert Lang for CBS News, Baltimore.
They say don't cry over spilled milk, but what about cream? In Germany, the driver of a dairy truck fell asleep at the wheel. The truck crashed and ruptured, spilling some 5,000 gallons of cream. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Ah, the lazy days of summer. Not for you, they're not. For you, it's go, go, go time. Time for Emergency. The natural energy boost packed with vitamin C, B vitamins, minerals, and electrolytes. Add Emergency to water to make a fizzy, fruity, super healthy drink. Rehydrate and re-energize with Emergency. Find it in the vitamin C supplement section.
Okay, here, distinguished professional. No. Distinguished looking man with a passion for life. No.
Having trouble creating a profile online that is going to attract the attention of your soulmate?
Handsome winner seeks to share his fortune.
At eHarmony.com, our scientific compatibility profile does the work for you. Log on today, and if you are a first-time member, you can try eHarmony for 7 days absolutely risk-free. eHarmony.com.
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yeah!
And I'm your humble host, Peter B., 6 minutes after the hour. We're in the free speech zone where your calls and comments are welcome. 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast. Or call me toll-free, 888-579-2540. It was astounding to me today, less than 24 hours after the Senate voted sharply in favor of changes in federal policy related to embryonic stem cell research, that the president chose to issue his first veto. And interestingly, he declined to make it a public ceremony when he signed the veto document. He wouldn't allow photographers or journalists to witness it. But then he put on a big show with a group of babies that were the product of in vitro embryonic cells that were not used by the people who donated them. And it was a photo opportunity that just underscored for me the craven pandering that the administration is doing that flies directly in the face of good science. And to get further comment on this, we turn to Dr. Zach Hall. He is president of the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine. And that is the entity that arose out of Proposition 71, which was passed by the voters and provides as much as $3 billion in funding for stem cell research here in California. Dr. Hall, thanks for joining us here on short notice today. I appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here, Peter.
Tell us a little bit about your reaction to the president's veto.
Well, we've been up and down in the last 24 hours. We were very heartened by the strong Senate vote for this bill. We thought it indicated a real change in reflecting the change in opinion in the United States, where now over 70% of those polled say that they support the use of embryos that are to be discarded for the formation of stem cell lines that can help cure disease. And boosted by that, we were then very disappointed to see the president basically give us the same old story, which is that the limited effort that the federal government is making now is enough to go ahead and to really take advantage of this opportunity, which it is not.
And he takes what is purported to be a strong moral view of the issue. Yet that position, that posture, is undercut by the very decision he made in August of 2001, which was to split the baby. And he said, well, you can continue research with existing stem cell lines, but there will be no more under my watch. And to me, that is an incoherent moral position.
Well, Peter, I would say it's worse than that, because the embryos that are to be used will be, in almost all cases, discarded in any case. And so the question is, can they be put to medical use and research use before that happens, or are they simply just to be washed down the drain? People ignore that. There are now estimated to be 400,000 frozen embryos in this country that are, and about 100,000 of those are potentially available for this research. Virtually every one of them will eventually be discarded if they're not used for research, and that we see is a terrible waste and a missed opportunity to actually use these little bits of life to sustain and to help those with disease and injury.
Mm-hmm. And what is your reaction to the spin that the president and Senator Brownback and others have tried to put on cord blood research and adult stem cell research? We were talking earlier today with Professor Moreno from the University of Virginia, Jonathan Moreno.
Yes.
And he was rather explicit in saying that cord blood and adult stem cells offer just a fraction of the potential of embryonic stem cell research.
He's exactly right. They have limited usefulness. Not all tissues in the body have adult stem cells, and their numbers are very small. They're hard to isolate, and even the numbers of cord blood cells are simply too small to use in any effective way. And the great potential of the embryonic stem cells is that they can be expanded. Their numbers can be increased in culture to very large numbers, making them tremendously much more useful than these other sources of cells. I don't mean to say the others aren't important. Bone marrow transplant, for example, is now done with adult stem cells that produce the blood system.
Right.
And that has been very effective for very many people. I think it illustrates the potential of the technique. And if one could expand that kind of work using embryonic stem cells to other diseases, it would be fantastic.
We're talking with Zach Hall. He is president of the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine. I have to keep working on that term. And Dr. Hall has been in this position for about a year now. And give us a quick update, if you would, on the progress in the courts of the challenges to Prop 71 and your ability to actually start granting funds to researchers here in California.
Well, we have two pieces of good news. First of all, in the courts, we got a very strong decision from the Superior Court judge, which upheld our position with respect to each of the claims brought by the litigants. These were people, by the way, who opposed stem cell research, although the suit was brought on constitutional grounds. We have a very strong decision. They have appealed it. It will go to a court of appeals and then probably or possibly eventually to the California Supreme Court. It could be as long as a year before we're able to access that money.
Mm-hmm.
The second piece of good news, it is in the meantime, we have been able to borrow money, basically, from philanthropic individuals and foundations that will support research in the state. And we have announced our first group of donations amounting to $14 million, and we have used that to fund a very exciting training program in stem cell research at 16 institutions throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
This will train the next generation of stem cell researchers. If we're going to undertake this big project with $3 billion, as you said, we will need many, many trained people. And one unfortunate aspect of the federal policies has been that young people have not gone into the field because of the restrictions on funding.
Mm-hmm.
So we initiated those grants in April, and already we're signing up trainees literally from all over the country who are coming to California and in some cases all over the world.
I know many people who are very hopeful about the prospects of the research you're conducting, and we really appreciate the trailblazing nature of the work that you're doing. Dr. Hall, do you have any sense that George W. Bush knows what a blastocyst is and has any real understanding of the science that he vetoed today?
I wished I knew. I do know people who have talked to him on this issue, and my sense is he has been polite, but not much more.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you wish to deflect a question about the politics, I'll understand. But there were 19 Republicans, a total of 63 senators, who voted for the bill. That is four shy of overriding a veto. Do you have a sense that there are four votes that could be flipped on this issue?
You know, I'm not knowledgeable enough to know. But I will say that I think there has been a real change in the tide here. I think the tide is running with stem cell research. I think support is increasing across the country, even in Texas, almost 70%, 68% the last figures I heard were in favor of using discarded embryos to make stem cell lines. I think the American people are going to speak louder than anything, and I think that politicians who don't understand that, either in whichever party, I think we'll be in an awkward position as we move forward.
All right, Dr. Hall, thank you for joining us. And again, I appreciate the work you're doing.
Thank you.
Dr. Zach Hall, he is president of the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine. See, I got it. And I thank him for joining us here today. Before we go to our break, I just want to read you a list of the knuckle draggers. These are the people who voted against the stem cell bill in the Senate yesterday. Allard of Colorado, Allen of Virginia, Bond of Missouri, Brownback of Kansas, Bunning of Kentucky, Burns of Montana, Chambliss of Georgia, Coburn, Dr. Coburn of Oklahoma, Coleman of Minnesota, Cornyn of Texas, Craig of Idaho, Crapo of Idaho, DeMint of South Carolina, DeWine of Ohio, Dole of North Carolina, Domenici of New Mexico, Ensign of Nevada, Enzi of Wyoming, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Grassley of Iowa, Hagel of Nebraska, Inhofe of Oklahoma, Isaacson of Georgia, Kyle of Arizona, Martinez of Florida, McConnell of Kentucky, Roberts of Kansas, Santorum of Pennsylvania, Sessions of Alabama, Shelby of Alabama, Sununu of New Hampshire, Talent from Missouri, Thomas of Wyoming, Thune of South Dakota, Vitter of Louisiana, Voinovich of Ohio. And one Democrat voted no, Ben Nelson of Nebraska. We'll take more of your calls in just a moment. Get on the line now, 831-899-5792 or toll-free 888-579-2540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and fun. I interview authors, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make the Monterey Bay Area such a delicious slice of our tasty planet. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Post Graduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
KRXA 540 looks at your traffic. It's 519. Here's Ashley Lane.
Thank you. We do have a traffic collision to report in Monterey County. This is northbound 1 after Munroth Avenue. A solo car crashed. The vehicle overturned in the center divide. Emergency crews responding there. And back to Gilroy Highway 152. This is at Ferguson Road and oil spill. A tanker spilled some oil at the intersection. Emergency crews still on the scene trying to get that cleaned up. Your great Las Vegas getaway begins by visiting Luxor.com. Unforgettable days, exciting nights. It all starts by visiting Luxor.com, your website for exclusive offers to the pyramid. Ashley Lane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Beautiful, Ashley. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you in about a half an hour. And coming up tonight at 7, it's Lionel right here on KRXA 540. We continue in the free speech zone here on the Peter B. Collins Show. All my lines are open right now. That means you can get on and off quickly. So give us a buzz, 831-899-5792. Or if you're calling long distance, you know, outside the Central Coast area, it's toll free at 888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. And there are a few items in the news, but before we get to that, I want to remind you that we are celebrating our first anniversary here at the Peter B. Collins Show. It was 1 year ago this week that we launched on KRXA 540 in Monterey, And Eureka's KGOE came online with us in November. And then we added Sacramento and Phoenix. And I'm just delighted at the growth of the program and the terrific response we've gotten. And I'm grateful to you. And to celebrate our first anniversary, we're giving away a case of fine Central Coast wine from select vintners in Monterey County in the Santa Cruz Mountains, courtesy of our friends at Monterey Bay Wine Company. If you'd like to enter, just drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. Include your name, address, a daytime phone, and that you're 21 so I don't get popped by the authorities. Tell me your most memorable moment of the Peter B. Collins Show over the past year. One entry per person, please. If you don't have email, you can drop it to me in the mail, but put a stamp on it so I don't have to pay for it. It's Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. That's Box 100, Mill Valley, and the zip is 94942. We'll hold the drawing and announce the winner coming up on August 1st.
Which sounds a lot like blatant homophobia to me.
Yes, one of those wedge issues that the Republicans have been promoting is hitting the rocks.
That's why we must unite.
Because House Republicans yesterday, in their homophobic best, were unsuccessful in an effort to pass a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage. And the surprising vote was 237 to 187, and that's well short of the two-thirds majority they would need to amend the Constitution. So I find that an important step forward in defeating a backward piece of legislation that's being promoted simply to divide Americans. And as we all know, the real problem with marriage is that heterosexuals can't seem to really get it right. Not that two guys or two women would like to have the same legal rights in this country. To me, it's a matter of civil rights, and it looks like the issue will be put on the shelf right there in Karl Rove's office to live another day. I'm sure we will see it back. And I just caught this in the hourly newscast at the top of the hour a few minutes ago, that the House of Representatives did pass a bill today that prevents any lawsuits from being filed in federal court that would challenge the Pledge of Allegiance and its inclusion of the phrase, under God. And even if you think that the Pledge of Allegiance with under God is okay, a good thing, or just kind of benign in your book, this is a scary trend. For Congress to pass laws saying that you cannot file a lawsuit over a specific issue, I think that's really scary. And this is such a trivial issue. Sure, it's emotional. Sure, you may think Michael Newdow is an atheist creep. I happen to think he's a really fine American who's standing up for what he believes and who is willing to fight the intrusiveness of religion in public discourse in America today. And I've talked to Michael Newdow on several occasions, and he's, he's an activist, a kind of self-appointed guy who has taken on this issue, and he had to suffer through a lot of publicity about the mother of his child, whom he never married, who went public with her disagreement with Newdow and with his use of their daughter as his cause of legal action. And I think Michael Newdow is regrouping, ready to take more litigation forward. And on the one hand, I do think it's a trivial matter, and when the Pledge of Allegiance is performed, I usually am pretty selective about whether I participate, whether I say anything, but I never use the phrase under God. And I don't feel that it is a compelling issue, like I said. But if he wants to bring that case and he wants to make that issue significant to him, well, I support his right to do so. And when we see the Republican majority jamming through this kind of legislation, everyone, even people who support the goal of this legislation, I think have to sit back and take notice. Because just a few years ago, James Sensenbrenner, More people know about who he is now because of the debate over immigration policy. He is the reactionary chair, Republican chair, of the House Judiciary Committee. And he supports legislation that would punish judges who rule in ways that Congress doesn't approve, who take on cases that Congress thinks are inappropriate. And he devised a whole system for sanctioning judges who don't perform according to his predetermined formulas. And we see the damage that's been done by minimum mandatory sentences, mostly around drug offenses, drug laws, that tie the hands of judges. And they are not permitted to do their job with the information and the case before them and administer true justice that is tailored to that situation. And instead, they have to go to the sentencing book and impose draconian terms on people who were bit players, usually wives or girlfriends of drug kingpins. The men plea bargain, get a couple of years. The women have no choice. They don't have anybody to give up. Maybe their boyfriend, but a lot of times they don't go in that direction. And so we have seen many, many cases of judges who are angry at the way the law requires them to mete out sentences that they would never choose on their own. And many of these are Republican-appointed judges who call themselves conservatives. But they believe in the separation of the branches of government and the checks and balances that came with our Constitution. So watch that one carefully. Don't let them, do not let them demagogue this issue. We've got to find a way to block it. Well, that's what I have to say right now. Coming up after a break, Marjorie Cohn is going to join us, professor of law at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego. We're going to talk about Israel and the Arms Export Act next.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Join R.J. Moyer for his weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Childhood Matters, the show for parents and everyone who cares about our kids.
This Sunday, we'll be joined by Joe Kelly, the author of Dads and Daughters, How to Inspire, Understand, and Support Your Daughter When She's Growing Up So Fast. I'm Nurse Rona, and I would love to hear from dads who are doing the best they can to understand their daughters.
Childhood Matters, this Sunday morning at 9 on KRXA 540.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. It's 33 minutes past the hour. Already today, we've had a number of views on the Middle East conflict. Professor Stephen Zunis joined us earlier and offered his analysis. We also got an update on the news developments from the region from Chris Tonsing at the Middle East Report. Joining us now is Professor Marjorie Cohn. We call her our house counsel affectionately, and she's yet to send us a bill. She teaches constitutional law at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego and is the incoming president of the National Lawyers Guild. Professor, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing okay. These issues are complicated and important. I wanted to start by asking you to describe for our listeners the Arms Export Act and to what extent Israel might be in violation of it.
The Arms Export Control Act of 1976 says that military hardware that's sold by the United States can only be used for defensive purposes or to maintain internal security.
Okay. And I understand from Professor Zunis earlier today, it's the first I've heard of it, that there is a resolution pending in the House of Representatives that would essentially state for the record that it is the sense of Congress that Israel is operating in a defensive manner. I find that that doesn't square with the facts, but have you heard about this?
I know that both parties in Congress are falling all over themselves to give uncritical support to Israel and, you know, nothing about the now, I think, over 300 civilians that have been killed in Lebanon and I'm not sure what the total is now in the Gaza Strip. But when you target civilians, that's not self-defense. That's a war crime. That's a war of aggression. And it's called collective punishment, and it violates both the Hague regulations and the Geneva Conventions, which say that attacks on a civilian population as a form of collective punishment can are illegal. No protected person may be punished for an offense he or she has not personally committed. So Israel is saying that when and this is both in the Gaza Strip and in Lebanon, when the Palestinians in Gaza crossed over the border into Israel and kidnapped the Israeli soldier, and when representatives of Hezbollah from Lebanon crossed into Israel and kidnapped two Israeli soldiers, that was an act of war, that was a provocation, and they had to defend themselves by using overwhelming military force and pummeling the entire population of Gaza and Lebanon into oblivion. And that's just, that goes way beyond self-defense.
Mm-hmm. And I, of course, am offended by the sense of collective punishment. I can support Israel's right to defend itself in a strategic and proportional way, but this appears to be far out of proportion, and there is some argument that they are implementing a plan, a series of scenarios,
that have been on the books for 5 years and were developed by the Sharon administration.
That's true. But, you know, let's get back to Israel defending itself, because on the one hand, by crossing over into Israel, over Israel's border, Hezbollah was violated international law. But on the other hand, Israel does not recognize any international borders. It goes into Gaza at will. It goes into the West Bank at will, into the Palestinian territories. And so there is an argument to be made that since, and I've seen this argument made actually in writing, not by myself but by other people, that since Israel does not recognize the legitimacy of international borders, that this actually was not a violation. I don't know that I agree with that, but that is one argument that's been made. You know, what is this all about, really? I mean, it's not about self-defense. I think it just defies reason and logic to think that it is, and I think that Congress, many in Congress who are going to be running for re-election, if not now, then later, know that they need the Jewish vote, they need funding, they need support from the Jewish lobby, and that's what I just think they're looking at this thing totally uncritically. But what is it really about? Well, in the past, several times, there has been the taking of, first of all, the Israel has almost 1,000 prisoners, Hezbollah prisoners, including women and children, I guess you would say Lebanese prisoners, and some of which are Hezbollah prisoners, in custody, some of them as long as 20 years, with no charges against them. Some of them have been tortured. And so in the past, Hezbollah has done precisely this, captured an Israeli soldier or two and then used it as a bargaining chip to negotiate the release of prisoners. This has been done quite a bit over the past few years. And in fact, the leader of Hezbollah actually announced a few months ago that he was going to do this. But on the other hand, some commentators are saying that Hezbollah knew that if it did cross over and get these soldiers, Israeli soldiers, that the new government, this is not the Sharon government anymore, but the new Israeli government, would react with overwhelming, just outrageous force and turn the people in the Arab world, not the Arab governments, many of which are ineffectual and don't really support the people, but a lot of the people in the so-called Arab streets, turn them against Israel. And now, what is the United States doing here? Well, the United States is, first of all, financing Israel, funding Israel, giving Israel all of the equipment, the, you know, tanks and helicopters and gunships and right. Hellfire missiles to do this. But what is in it for the U.S.? Well, the United States and France have been trying to disarm Hezbollah. Hezbollah is a thorn in their side. And a special U.N. resolution was passed for this purpose. But the Lebanese government is very weak. The Lebanese government could not disarm Hezbollah. So Israel is now trying to disarm Hezbollah, but it's destroying Lebanon in the process. And the Israel admits that they can't destroy Hezbollah, but they say they want to neutralize it. What Israel does not want are any foreign observer forces on the border, because they don't want any foreign intervention in their dealings with the Arabs. What Israel really wants is a dictator in Lebanon who can control the population. That's what Sharon tried in 1982. Israel wants Lebanon to be like any other Arab country, all of the other Arab countries, which are
authoritarian.
Very submissive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
that's really what it's all about. Now, what about Syrian and Iranian influence?
Mm-hmm.
According to Robert Fisk, who is a journalist for The Independent and who has lived in Beirut for, I think, 20 years, Iran is providing military support to Hezbollah and Syria is providing political support. Now, in terms of the Bush administration's motives, Bush is heavily influenced by the neocons. And the neocon strategy is to control the entire Middle East as a counterweight to Russia and especially China. But that's what the Iraq War is all about. It has nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction or democracy
at all.
And
it's working very well, because the Iraqi government that's supposed to be our puppet just voted almost unanimously to condemn Israel for its actions of the past week.
Right, and that's what's happening here, is that it's going to create even more hassles for our soldiers in Iraq, because the Shia in Iraq, which is the majority, of course, are very sympathetic to what's happening to their Shia brothers and sisters at the hands of Israel. But also, the U.S., of course, you know, has been rattling its sabers against Iran and Syria, and this could spread to Iran and Syria. There could, and that's the danger here. I mean, that would be really, really outrageous if that happened, and it would be very dangerous for our soldiers in Iraq and very dangerous for the world, indeed.
But it would be also consistent with the blueprint of the Project for a New American Century.
Right, right. Now, Seymour Hersh wrote in last week's New Yorker that the U.S. Strategic Command, supported by the Air Force, has been drawing up plans at the president's direction for a major bombing campaign in Iran. This is hot off the press. And evidently, Bush and Cheney wanted to use nuclear weapons in Iran. And General Pace has, according to Seymour Hersh, has talked them out of that, because there's a bomb that's almost as powerful as a nuclear weapon, and it would not be as politically damaging, because they're not talking about, this is what Seymour Hersh talks about, they're talking about the radiation would spread around, that wouldn't look good. Doesn't talk about all the people that would be killed and maimed.
Yeah, it's just a PR disaster.
Exactly.
And as you point out, there are bunker buster bombs that don't involve nuclear capacity that could be used. Of course, I don't sanction that either, but if they're going to do it, for God's sake, they shouldn't nuke Iran to prevent Iran from developing a nuke.
Well, you know, keep in mind that this is history replaying itself, and I think we've talked about this. The weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, the mushroom cloud, that was all a bunch of hooey. And according to nuclear engineers, and specifically one I know who's been a nuclear engineer for 35 years, he says, and I've seen this also recently confirmed in another report I've read, Iran is enriching its uranium up to about 3 or 4%, which is well within the limits for peaceful purposes, and it is not a violation of the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty, and the UN has not said it's in violation, material violation of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. In order to use uranium for nuclear weapons, it has to enrich up to 90%, and Iran is nowhere near that. And so to say that Iran is an imminent threat is just poppycock, and it's just an excuse to go in and do another regime change and get another U.S.-friendly puppet in another Middle Eastern country. And what we have to ask ourselves is it worth our precious soldiers, money, and ultimately national security to go along with another one of Bush's very dangerous follies?
Well, and there's a lot of risk that is underplayed relative to Iran. They have many options to mess with us in Iraq, to launch, other Hezbollah-type attacks into friendly, nations somewhat friendly to the United States, like Saudi Arabia or Kuwait. And I think that Bush appears oblivious to many of these potential consequences. We're talking with Professor Marjorie Cohn here on the Peter B. Collins Show. How's your time, Marjorie? Can you stay another segment?
Yes. Well, one more thing that I wanted to say.
Yeah, I need to go to a break in 1 minute. Go ahead.
Okay. One more thing I wanted to say, and that is that Syria and Iran have made a pact that if either one gets invaded, the other one is going to come to its defense.
That's right.
And that's also a very dangerous proposition for the United States to ponder.
We're going to take a quick break and return with Professor Marjorie Cohn. I want to get her take, because we haven't talked recently since the Hamdan versus Rumsfeld decision came down from the U.S. Supreme Court. That's coming up next. If you have a question or comment, we'll try to squeeze you in. 831-899-5792 or toll free. 888-579-2540. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Hi, this is Ed Schultz, America's number one progressive talker. Join me every weekday from noon to three here on KRXA 540. I'm based in Fargo, North Dakota, and we bring you news and views from the heartland of America. I'm fighting the righties every day on behalf of the working people who've made the nation great. Tell your friends to listen. Give me a call toll-free, 1-877-934-6833. The Ed Schultz Show, noon to three on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
Say 540 with one more look at your commute home at 547. Here's Ashley Lane.
Well, let's head back to Monterey County where we have a solo car crash. That's northbound one after Moonrush Avenue. Crash earlier in the center divide. That vehicle overturned and emergency crews are on the scene. They're trying to get that cleared away. Reports of two other vehicles that may have been involved in that traffic collision. And in Gilroy, this is Highway 152 at Ferguson Road. The CHP is still on the scene. They are trying to get oil off of the roadway. A tanker spilled oil at the intersection, and we have crews trying to get that cleaned up right now, so you can expect delays in both of these areas. First-time home buyer or looking for investment property, look to your local Realty World broker for integrity, service, experience. Realty World, where the right agent makes all the difference in the world. RealtyWorldNCA.com. Ashley Lane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Ashley. Appreciate your work. Twelve minutes before the hour, we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with Professor Marjorie Cohn from the Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego. And Marjorie, you posted a piece today. I guess Truth Out was down because of a hacker attack. And I found this item at ZDNet, I think.
Yes, ZNet. ZNet. Yes, I'm not writing for Truth Out anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Do you want to give an address where people can read this piece? Because I think it was quite interesting.
It's www.zmag, that's zmag.org.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it can also be found at commondreams.org.
Okay. And do you care to say what happened with Truth Out? Did you have a disagreement or?
No, I'm writing for Common Dreams, Counterpunch, ZNet, Alternet, BuzzFlash, mm-hmm. several other outlets.
Great. All righty. And there are two items I wanted to cite from this. You report that on Saturday last week, the Pan-Arab daily Al-Hayat claimed that Israel, with backing from the U.S., had given Syria 72 hours to pressure Hezbollah into releasing the two captured Israeli soldiers and stopping their cross-border attacks. And then a powerful quote from Phyllis Bennis at the Institute for Policy Studies. The escalation in Gaza reflects the failure of Israeli unilateralism, the failure of the quartet-backed roadmap, the failure of the U.S.-orchestrated exclusion of the U.N., the failure of the international community to end the occupation, and the failure of the U.N. to intervene and provide international protection in the meantime. I think that sums it up in a powerful way, and the bottom line is clear that the Bush administration's foreign policy in this region is a complete failure.
It is a complete failure, and Bush has just taken a totally hands-off approach. I mean, prior presidents have at least made some feeble efforts to get involved, although not as really objective, honest brokers. But Bush has just, and you know, I think that the reason that Bush has really kept hands-off is because not only is he very influenced by the neocons, but he's also very heavily influenced by what many people call the Christian Zionists. They're people who are evangelical Christians who read the scriptures to say that until the temple is rebuilt in Jerusalem, that Jesus will not come back, the second coming will not happen. And so there's a much better chance of that temple being rebuilt if it's in Jewish hands than if it's in Muslim hands, and that once Jesus does come back, then they will convert all the Jews to Christianity. You know, the Jews think that their allies, you know, because they like the Jews, and I don't think it's really that at all. I think they're plenty anti-Semitic, but they want to keep Israel in Jewish hands so that, you know, for the second coming. And Bush really believes that. Yeah. And he also really believes in Armageddon. And I think that he really is excited to think that he may be creating Armageddon because there's really no other explanation for the incredibly reckless and dangerous policies that he has been following since with Iraq, with you know, threatening Iran, threatening North Korea. You know, I mean, if you know, I am no friend of Iran and North Korea, but I'll tell you, if I was a country and Bush put me in the axis of evil along with Iraq, and then I saw what he did with Iraq, boy, I'd be trying to develop my weapons as well.
Well, and Putin last week shot back to Bush at the G8 summit when Bush was preaching to him on how we've spread democracy into Iraq and he'd like to see more democracy and religious freedom in Russia. And Putin said, we've seen that thing in Iraq and we don't want anything like that. Marjorie, let me turn next to the pre-July 4th ruling by the Supreme Court in Hamdan versus Rumsfeld. What kind of encouragement did you take from this rather remarkable ruling from a Republican Supreme Court?
Well, it was the Supreme Court finally called a halt to George W. Bush's claim of unbridled executive power. Bush had been claiming that because he's the commander in chief, he can basically do whatever he wants. He can torture people, he can treat them inhumanely, he can spy on Americans without a warrant in violation of the FISA law. He can go in and prosecute a war of aggression in Iraq. He can do just about anything. And this Supreme Court case, although it deals with the issue of the legality of these military commissions that Bush set up to try prisoners at Guantanamo, has much more far-reaching ramifications. Bush set up these military commissions to basically, they're basically kangaroo courts, to deny prisoners, to deny people basic due process rights. They can be tried, convicted, and executed they can actually be convicted by evidence they never see in a proceeding they can't attend, with evidence that would be inadmissible in a federal proceeding, and that includes statements obtained by coercion. I mean, they're just a joke. And so the Supreme Court said that they violate the Uniform Code of Military Justice and they violate the Geneva Conventions, and that's really the most important part of this decision, because Bush, after listening to Alberto Gonzalez and his other legal eagles, you remember Alberto Gonzalez said that the Geneva Conventions were quaint.
Quaint.
Bush said, well, Geneva doesn't apply to suspected al-Qaeda members, and the Supreme Court said, oh, yes, it does. Common Article 3, there are no holes in the Geneva Conventions. You're not allowed to torture anyone, whether they're prisoners of war or not. And they talked about this Common Article 3. And the Common Article 3 basically requires a regularly constituted court with all the judicial guarantees recognized as indispensable by civilized peoples. And that had been, and that's really the Uniform Code of Military Justice. The other thing that the Common Article 3 says is that all prisoners must be treated humanely, no humiliating and degrading treatment. And so that's going to put a real crimp in the Bush administration's cruel and torturous interrogations. But even more significant is that they could be tried for war crimes under the U.S. War Crimes Act, which defines violations of Common Article 3 of Geneva as war crimes. And so officials all the way up the chain of command, including the commander-in-chief, could be prosecuted for war crimes if we had an attorney general who really wanted to follow the law, which, of course, we don't.
And in your view, does Hamdan versus Rumsfeld, does this decision trim the sails of the president on the underpinnings of his claims of expanded presidential powers? First of all, during wartime, a very, very broad assertion by the administration. And secondly, we were supposed to infer that the authorization post 9/11 for military action and the Patriot Act gave him these sweeping powers that he claims. The court said no, did it not?
Yes, this is an argument that's been made by Bush and Gonzalez that this authorization for the use of military force, even though it says nothing about military commissions or the president's authority to convene military commissions that don't comport with the Uniform Code of Military Justice, that in fact, and also that the authorization for the use of military force, which was passed by Congress the day after 9/11, even though it doesn't say anything about spying on Americans without a warrant, that implicitly that Congress was authorizing that, and that implicit authorization, together with Bush's commander-in-chief powers, would allow him to, A, set up these kangaroo courts, and, B, spy on Americans without a warrant in violation of a congressional law, the FISA law.
Now, with that in mind, let me flip to the comments of Alberto Gonzalez yesterday on Capitol Hill, where he acknowledged to Arlen Specter that the investigation of the NSA eavesdropping program will not go forward because the Office of Professional Responsibility, which has handled classified investigations in the past without any known leaks, has been denied access to clearances that would permit them to investigate this. In other words, the president has his own catch-22 that he devised and imposed here to prevent further investigation. Doesn't this fly in the face of Hamdan versus Rumsfeld?
Yes, it does. And, you know, Specter also has been trying to work out a compromise where he gives Bush almost everything he wants with this spying program, and Bush, and so the way the press has been playing it up is that Bush finally agreed that he would submit the legality or illegality of this NSA spying program to this secret FISA court. The only problem is that the bill that Specter is putting forward says that Bush can, if he wants, submit the legality of the program to FISA court, and even if he does, they can decide in secret, and we'll never know if they actually uphold it or not.
Yeah.
So he's really trying as much as he can to continue to exert this unbridled executive power. The Supreme Court shot him down, and he's going to try to push it as hard as he can, and it will be very interesting to see if Congress actually stands up and says no to him and really upholds the separation of powers.
Some chutzpah from Gonzalez yesterday to acknowledge that, given what you just cited.
That's true. That's true.
Marjorie, we're out of time. Thank you very much for your counsel and expertise. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, Peter. Bye-bye.
Marjorie Cohn from the Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego, the incoming president of the National Lawyers Guild. Tomorrow on the Peter B. Collins Show, Ron Susskind will join us in our second hour. He's written The 1% Doctrine. Have you heard about that book? We're going to cover a lot of the issues that we've been talking about today, including some of the pre-war antics of the Bush administration. Thanks for listening. I'm Peter B. We'll be back at you tomorrow, same time, same stations. Thanks for listening.
Happy trails.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Doesn't your Volvo deserve to be maintained and repaired by the best? Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is locally owned and operated by Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco. Tracy is a factory-trained Volvo service advisor. Mike is a factory-trained and certified Volvo technician with over 17 years of experience servicing and repairing Volvos. Join the many Monterey Bay Volvo owners who only trust Hans Auto Repair to service their Volvos. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside. Call Hans at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Lila Boclini of New York was among 1,000 Americans fleeing Lebanon who arrived in Cyprus tonight aboard a cruise ship chartered by the State Department.
It was a very smooth experience, and I'm glad that they did this for us.
Compared with other evacuees who endured crowded vessels with few facilities, she says the Orient Queen was fairly comfortable.
It's a little bit tense, but it's been relaxing. There was a small pool on board, and the passengers who had bathing suits went inside, and there was a little cafe to sit outside and enjoy the scenery a little bit.
The U.S. Navy sends a ship in tomorrow to join the effort, and another cruise ship arrives in Beirut Friday, so the State Department plans to be moving Americans out at the rate of 4,000 a day. A new element has been introduced in the conflict, ground fighting.
I'm Robert Berger on the Israel-Lebanon border. That's the sound of Israeli artillery pounding suspected Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. Each time one of the big guns opens fire, it leaves a trail of smoke. And I can feel the ground shaking here. This artillery base has been carved out of a field next to an Arab village as the shells are lobbed over a mountain and into Lebanon. Robert Berger, CBS News, on the Israel-Lebanon border.
Israel staged a massive airstrike in southern Beirut, dropping 23 tons of bombs on what was believed to be a Hezbollah command bunker. Hezbollah issued a statement claiming it was nothing more than a construction site for a mosque and saying none of its leaders died. President Bush wielded his veto pen like a sword today, slicing and dicing a bill that would have expanded federal funding for stem cell research using embryos.
I'm Peter Mayer at the White House. The president sees it as a moral issue.
If this bill were to become law, American taxpayers would, for the first time in our history, be compelled to fund the deliberate destruction of human embryos. And I'm not going to allow it.
It is the first veto of the Bush presidency, a popular move among many conservatives, with notable exceptions, including former First Lady Nancy Reagan and Senators Bill Frist and Orrin Hatch. Democrats will make it a fall campaign issue. The White House says Mr. Bush is getting a bum rap. Peter Mayer, CBS News, the White House.
Late today, supporters of the measure in the House failed to muster the two-thirds vote needed to override a veto. A new twist in Kirkland, Washington, where the home of an Army Reserve